Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Congratulations, your morning just got a bit classier. A media legend, a ferocious linebacker, a clueless producer, and you.
Searching for a replacement window online? Visit windownation.com today.
So raise a glass and act accordingly. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, let's do it live on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. How you living, Threes?
Living the dream, brother. How you doing?
You know, not bad. Not bad.
Not bad.
I mean, that's a lie.
How's the back doing? That's
right. The back's okay.
How's the back doing?
Back's fine. It's been fine.
Okay.
Back's fine.
I got the whole family at the barn this morning, in case you're wondering.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah. We got some house showings, you know, if you will. And so,
so
it means all four dogs and kids over to the barn.
Yeah.
And so if you hear Cersei breathing fire in the background, that's what it is. Thankfully, Remy is still napping in the car. London and Hayden are looking at me like, Hayden's giving me a look like, Dad, why are you even talking about me? Get my name out your mouth.
Right.
Anyway, that's our morning.
The time is, I suppose, since Luke is taking the job at USC, you'll be his defensive coordinator.
Nope.
And then you guys are building in Laguna. Is that right?
No.
With a view of the Pacific?
All that's false.
That's not
all
what's
that's
happening.
False.
That's
nope.
Not, no.
Nope. Hey, but you know who I did see yesterday out here in Dublin house shopping? You know, I think I saw two guys together. It was Will Muschamp and Mark D'Antonio.
Oh, they were both there.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, you
know,
don't
I think
say.
They might actually, both of them might actually be looking at my house today, trying to, you know, to come in and fix everything.
Because they're going to start tomorrow, apparently.
Yep.
It's interesting. Luke had the we'll talk a little bit about Luke in the 11 o'clock hour in terms of the presser he had yesterday. It was just exactly who Luke is. Like, that's just who he is. Like, if you haven't been paying attention, we've known him for a long time. You know him very, very well. You specifically know him very, very well. But even you out there listening, you know him very, very well. This is who he is. He's not he is not interested in any of the ballyhoo or the tomfoolery. But I am curious if he'll have to have another press conference today to say that he's not coming up here to become the defensive coordinator and lead his top 10 team at Cincinnati to come up here and return to his job. Let's just start there because, we have become I think as a society at large, and then certainly in sports, it's a window into it. But we have become incredibly reactionary.
Yeah.
And we have no real attention. We can't really hold our attention. We want things now. I talk
That's
about
right.
it with my kids all the time. It's an on-demand society. They don't have
That's
to
right.
wait for anything.
Isn't it bother you in the car on that note? Like the demands that you get for the certain songs?
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I used to remember listening to 96.3 KDWB in Minnesota. Just hoping that the song I wanted to hear would come on some 15-minute ride to an ice rink or to a football field. And now it's like we get in the car, play this, and then I want this. Hold on a second. For one, this is Daddy's car.
Yeah.
Two, sure, what song did you say again? All right, we'll play that first. You know, but still, like, it's my goodness, the demands. They don't even know. They don't even know, let alone shows.
No, they don't. And it's, it's funny you say that about the car because they'll just say, I'll hit... Like, let's say, you know, we do Hell's Bells on Saturdays on the way to football games. So they will hit it.
Of course,
they'll
raise
hit
them upright.
The icon that says Hell's. We're raising men here. Hit the That's icon right. that says Hell's Bells on the screen. And if it doesn't play right away, then I'm just like, well, let's just see what this is. And it's some other song in that vein. I mean, that's the way that it works.
Yeah.
Right? That's the way these streaming services work.
On the streaming, the nice little streaming, thanks to Elon Musk.
Yeah, he did a good job with that. So they'll stream in the next song. And I'm like, this is a pretty good song, too. Maybe we just listen to Back in Black, and then we'll get, I'm guessing Hell's Bells will come around sooner or later. Yeah. And they'll be, well, why don't you just ask it to play it?
Yeah.
And I said, well, sometimes you hear songs that you don't never have heard before.
Right.
And that's a win, right? And then maybe you like that song as much as you like Hell's Bells, although I doubt it on the way to a football Saturday, but nevertheless.
Right. Yeah.
So
I'm with you.
So this brings us back to, you know, kind of yesterday and where we are.
Mm-hmm.
We are, I think, and we'll hear from Coach Day, not his best moment, my opinion. Just not his best moment. I don't think yesterday was the strongest, you know, that we've seen Coach Day. He's never done this before. Never been a head coach before. He's never had to face a loss in season before. He's never lost a game that he wasn't supposed to.
Right.
Right? I mean,
which
you
stinks.
Lose to Clemson
in
the national semifinal.
Yeah,
fine.
It stinks. Yes.
You lose to Bama. Okay, that's an all-time Bama team, and we weren't as good last year as we were the year before. I mean, I think you can you can certainly make sense of that. So this is a loss that, I mean, this is your 14-point favorite. It's at home. You were supposed to win, and you didn't. And so he's having to deal with all of that. And I think at times, even those inside the, I think this applies to those inside the program. I think it applies to some of the people that cover the program. I think it applies to certain people. I think that we think social media is reality. I think at times. You think that social media is reality. And and it's not. It's not reality. And at Ohio State, I've always felt like it was a little bit different. Have we gotten to the point where you can't lose a game or you got to fire people? You can't come up with solutions?
It's we pretty crazy. The
is that where we're at? We lose one and
I
that's
think
it?
So.
It's all,
I think
it's all over. Gotten... We got to fire everybody? Like, it ain't right. I'm not saying that the defense is right. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. But guess what? The defense wasn't right against Bama.
Right. I think it's finally the culmination of I do believe the fans gave everyone the benefit of the doubt last year, right? Because they didn't have spring practice, you know, they didn't have a real fall, the up in the air of the season. That's why when we saw stuff defensively, we said, you know what, maybe it was just all those things, right? Like there was a lot happening last year. And so you thought, okay, let's give him an off season, and that's what Coach Day decided, right? He decided, I'm not going to bring in a co, you know, I'm not going to bring in somebody that really. He brought in Paul Rhodes, you know, as a analyst. But here's what people need to understand: analysts cannot do on field work. So I've inquired about that position. You cannot do on field work as an analyst.
Yeah.
So it means that you sit in the coach's room. He can talk to Kerry. He can say, hey, have you thought about doing this, that, or whatever? But as far as actually getting on the field or teaching the players, like, he's handicapped by NCAA rules. And if you go too far, NCAA comes after you like they are in Nebraska. That's the whole thing with Nebraska, is the fact that their analysts were doing on-field drills, and that's not allowed. Now, do you want me to believe that all these analysts that Nick Saban has brought in have never done anything on-field with guys? Come on. Come on. It's like the head coach that wants to... you know, go on Hard Knocks, I won't name names, and wants to bring in the practice squad wide receiver, discipline him, and then cut him, yet the starting wide receiver is doing the exact same thing, and you don't say a word to the starter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole image there. That's what the NCAA does. You know what? Let's pick on Nebraska, and maybe Nick will get the point down there in Tuscaloosa, but we're scared of Nick.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how it works. So I think we're at a point where the fans have kind of said, hold on, all right, this is a pattern. You heard Coach Day say it. It's a pattern now. It's not a one-off. This is something that obviously hasn't gotten fixed through all offseason. The frustrating thing for all of us is that you're not, like, here's a newsflash. You're not hiring anybody. Mark D'Antonio is not coming in here. Mark D'Antonio is 65 years old. He wants to hang out with his
Bob
grandkids.
Bob had a great tweet about that yesterday.
You know, like, I talked to Bob yesterday. Bob's like, Mark's literally watching my nephew right now. Like, he's not interested in coming and being an assistant.
Good Lord.
He's not even interested in all things. He's like Tress. He's from the Tress cloth. He's like, you know what? I've had my run. I'm the most successful coach at Michigan State. Bob knows him better than I do. But there's not, like, he's not coming back. Luke's not quitting at Cincinnati to come up 71 today. Will Muschamp, look, we have who we have, and I think that there are things to fix it. Now, what are those things? You have to start blitzing now, and that's run blitzing, because obviously rushing four, playing simple whatever is not stopping the run. So let's be aggressive. Let's start stunting our D linemen. Let's get them moving, which I know is not a very popular thing in the building, because typically we've had a four-person D-line that can wreck stuff and get after the quarterback, right? Well, maybe we don't have a four-down D-line that can wreck stuff when they just block with five. So you know what you got to do? You got to send more than five then. Or at least send one, and then you have a five-on-five, and then you say, hey, do we beat a one-on-one? Do we beat our man? Or is this something where it's not going to, you know, we have to send six when they have five? And then now we have to start trying to guess on, are they sliding the protection? Are they going 5-0, meaning the 5-0 linemen have the five down, and we got to send a linebacker somewhere free, hopefully, and hope they don't catch the man out of the backfield? These are all things you got to consider now. And so that is what they can do. They can say, you know what, we haven't used any of these blitzes. We've tried to kind of go about it, rush four, seeing how that works. Well, you know what, that's not getting there. So maybe we do have to blitz more. And so you say, well, what's that do to the back end? They're going to be like, maybe don't play man blitzes. Maybe by down in distance, if you have a little third and seven, you play fire zone. And you cover the inside guys and make them throw to the flat. You rally, V tackle, boom, you get off the field. They needed seven, they got six. So we used to play back in the day. There are solutions, but the solution is not going to be someone coming from out of retirement or unemployment to come into the building. It's going to come from the guys in there talking, coming up with new ideas, certain rooms saying, you know what, maybe we don't like doing all this. We will acquiesce because for the benefit of the defense, and then find your absolute top dudes and play them and let them play all game. You know, if it's Cody Simon, let Cody Simon play every single
let
snap.
Make mistakes.
Until he's tired.
Let him stay out
let
there.
Tommy play every single snap.
If that's
I don't
who
mind.
You play your
even
best.
If you yes, I don't even mind if you have certain guys for certain packages, right? Like if Tommy's a 4-3 Mike, and then when we go 4-2-5 and he comes out, sure, take him out. That's fine. That's part. It's called package stuff. But I don't want he's a 4-3 Mike, and then the next series we're in 4-3, it's somebody else. And the next series is back to Tommy. Because guess what? When that counter hits with a puller, hey, we saw this earlier. I did it, coach. I was on the bench. I didn't see that play. I could have if I was out there for every single play. But I wasn't because we're rotating. And so maybe some other new guys come in when it hits for the second or third time, and we sit here saying, that's the third time they've run it. Not that kid on the field. It's the first time he's seen it. Yeah. Maybe if he was on the field the whole game, he would have saw it two more times and maybe would have adjusted a little wider. So I just think there's solutions in-house. But the panic and the, hey, everyone's gotta go. Like, no, there are people in the building. They have plenty more games to fix it. And then if it doesn't get fixed, then you bring it back up. But mid-season like this,
I think it's incredible.
It's not gonna change. The thing is like, and here's the thing too: the blitzes that you do have, now you call them and run them, and you hope the blitzes that you've installed are good enough. But the idea that you're going to totally reshape the whole scheme, like, no, you know how many hours they have into this scheme? It's just calling the right calls now. But the amount of, you can coach up things like disguise and showing and this and that. That stuff guys can catch up on. But as far as like totally revamping who you are, that's a pipe dream, man. I mean, that's stuff that you would see on message boards, and I'm not against message boards, but like in a realistic in a locker room, no, it just... It can't happen. You have the stuff that you've installed. We did this in the Rams at one point. I mean, we were doing so much like man stuff over and over and over, and teams started to catch up to us to where Greg said, you know what, here are some blitzes that we've installed that are zone. I don't like doing fire zone, but maybe we run it better than the man stuff that I did in New Orleans, you know? And next thing you know, you threw what you had in the playbook, and it surprises teams. Oh, gosh, they haven't shown this. They never run this. So what is that for us? You know, what is that for us? Is it a fire zone? I don't know. I'm just saying there are things to do. You just have to trust that Carrie and the rest of that staff will get together and we'll brainstorm and hopefully find something that works for the guys.
I think it's incredibly panicky to be talking about it. It's incredibly panicky. I don't think it's how Ohio State football behaves as a program. I don't think you do that. You don't see this very often in the National Football League, let alone in college football. You know, you want to start getting this fixed. I think in a way the bed was made. I mean, you think about when Greg Madison left. I mean, there's nobody on that defense now other than Kerry Combs who's called defense.
Yep.
There's nobody there.
Yep.
Right? So they've put themselves in this spot a little bit in terms of there isn't somebody else out there that's going to go, yeah, I did it this way. Maybe let's give this a shot. There's that, from a collaboration standpoint, there isn't that. That's a big deal. To not have somebody like Greg Madison in that room.
Yeah.
With the experience that he has. So that's gone.
Of course there is. Look, at least in the coaching staff meetings, Paul Rhodes is an experienced D coordinator. He can at least say, hey, here are some pressures that I think we could put in, or here are some tweaks to our coverages.
Yeah.
Now, that's assuming Paul Rhodes is the answer. Right? Like, that's assuming that he is the guy that has some of the answers to help Kerry. It's assuming Kerry wants to listen. There's a lot of assumptions here.
There's
I'm not saying pay attention to the scores. I'm just saying there is obviously pride when it comes to a lot of these guys, egos. You can get recommendations left and right. I mean, this happens all the time on staffs where guys recommend stuff. The D coordinator, you know, either says that no, because he's the one in charge, or he says, okay, I'll think about it, and then you never see it. I mean, I've seen that plenty of times in my career in St. Louis. The good ones know how to massage egos. They make you feel good with your recommendation and then never put it in. You know?
Right.
Now, there are also really good ones I've seen that take recommendations and are willing to adapt and adjust. And so I don't have enough experience around Coach Combs to know how he's like. He comes across as one that's really willing to collaborate, right,
yeah,
with everybody.
I think that's on point.
But I don't know, like, I have no reference for Coach Rose, right? Like, I don't know if, like...
No.
It's impossible for us to be like, well, if we give him a little more say, I don't know. I don't know what that's like. But regardless, I think as far as the pipe dream for Buckeye fans about someone walking into the building, that's not happening. What's happening is they're going to go to battle with the guys you have and you reassess at the end of the year. And you hope that things start to get a little bit better and confidence grows throughout these next, 4 weeks, which...
Well, it's going to. That's the other point. It's going to. It will get better. It's going to get better this week.
Tulsa, now, Akron, some of this and Rutgers. Stuff is finite. Rutgers, I assume it'll get better. Yeah. But when it comes to Maryland...
Maryland's
going to test the hell out of you when it comes to their skill on our defense.
So there's some direct questions I want to ask you specifically about what we're doing defensively and what we see. And we will get into that. You'll hear from Ryan Day's press conference yesterday, which was a fascinating one. It was the first one that he had where he was, legitimately questioned about decisions that he had made and what is next. That hadn't happened before. He's had disappointing press conferences, sure, but not like this. This was different. We will have that for you coming up a little bit later as well. It is your first Friday. It is a Hey Guys first Friday. So if you have questions on Bucks, Browns, Bourbon, raising boys, vacation, raising girls, how to decide what streaming service.
I got a good one yesterday on Instagram, so I hope Chops chooses it.
Okay.
Well, there you go. I thought it was pretty entertaining. But
Get those in, and we'll handle that. We're off and running. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
If you consider yourself a Buckeye fan, you've come to the right place. This is your heritage sports talker and home of Ohio State Athletics, The Fan, Ohio's sports destination. Big in Montana and also Minnesota and everywhere else too. You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Hey friends, Bo Bishop here, and mortgage rates have plummeted. It's the lows of the year, your home value, high of the year, and you can take advantage of this specific situation with my friends at Neighborhood Lender. You can refinance now with Neighborhood Lender, pay zero closing costs, even skip the next one or two house payments altogether, and they do this at Neighborhood Lender. They make refinancing easy. It's an all-digital, super-fast platform. You won't believe how easy it is. There's no paperwork, no junk fees, no big bank hassle. You can refinance right now. You can snag the rate of your lifetime. You can lower your house payment with no closing costs. It's a local company, too, guys. You can also refinance, get cash out of your home's equity. People are getting tens of thousands of dollars out of their equity, paying off debt, applying it to their home, remodeling their kitchen, doing an outdoor project. You need to act now. They'll get a better loan, get cash out, lower your payment, pay zero in closing costs, and skip your next house payment altogether. Call Neighborhood Lender, 614-882-LOAN, 614-882-LOAN, neighborhoodlender.com, 614-882-LOAN. It's an equal housing lender, NMLS 69349. Not all loans apply for no closing cost option, subject to lender approval. All right, these are some of the things that you see, and you're going to hear from Ryan Day in a second from his press conference from yesterday. So the single high safety look that we want to play. So that comes from Ryan Day, right? And this is rare. You don't see this that often.
Yep.
In college football. Usually, in fact, a lot of times you see three safeties in college football, but primarily three, and then the second would be two. So the idea of playing one single high safety, what is the objective? What do you have to do that? Why would you run that?
Yeah. So single high safety will give you the opportunity to say, hey, we're going to try to keep everything the same run fit wise for the linebackers, for the safeties filling in those gaps. You're given the appearance of zone, man, what is it? Are they in three deep? Are they in single high? And you're trying to just keep it simple for your defense to be able to know where they're supposed to align to any formation, right? It's the idea behind what Seattle used to do. And the idea was, if we're going to play man or three deep, a lot of the run fit gaps are exactly the same. Now, there's little tweaks here and there due to, obviously, if I'm in zone, I can really stay in this A gap if I'm a Mike in 3-by-1. If it's man and I have the tight end, well, now, I mean, it just depends. If it's man low hole, that guy's free. He gets to stay in the same exact gap. Guess who has the tight end? The safety that would creep down, right? That would insert to the field side. So when the quarterback sees that safety come down, he doesn't know, all right, is that man or is this the zone? Because whether it's cover three or cover one, these guys in a 3-by-1 are lined up the exact same, right? Safety comes down the passing strength most of the time. You want to have your, obviously, more athletic safety in zone or man to the passing strength, to where more of the routes are going. And 2-by-2, same thing. Safety can come down to the nickel side, to the passing strength, or if you want to come weak, come weak. But whatever it is, you can mirror calls to the quarterback. You say, well, what if they go in motion? We used to sometimes, if you had really good athletes, you can bump the motions, you know, and try to make all motion adjustments the same to try to not give the quarterback a man zone declaration. But the idea is all the shifting and motioning, the gaps stay the same, right, for the guys in the run fits. And so what's frustrating is that you're seeing some of these gaps be missed. And then I heard, you know, on the long touchdown run that there was a miscommunication between some of the linebackers. And so when that happens, now that's on the players. If it's can't communicate to you, you got to talk to each other. We all got to be on the same page.
I heard.
And so it goes back to who's the alpha. Like if we're talking about what the call is and there's two different, you know what? You check to something basic. This happens so many times in St. Louis. It's loud. It's third down. Or it's second down, whatever, right? It's just, things are chaotic. I'm trying to scream to Janoris Jenkins, who doesn't want to jog to the huddle because he says that he needs to save his energy because he's covering people all day. That's fine. So I'm trying to signal to him. And if he looks at me with a confused look of like, what in the heck are you trying to say? I do a hand signal for cover two. We get out of it. Oh, but it was third and one. You gave up the first down. That's fine. I'll give him a 7-yard gain. You know what they didn't get? They didn't get a 65-yard touchdown because we had a drop coverage off of miscommunication. So I'll live with the 6-yard gain. And maybe next time on third one, I'll check it to a man thing and we'll all be on the same page. But I'm not going to sit here and having, 10 guys playing one coverage, one missing it, because all it takes is the slight chance that the one guy who's in the wrong call, he gets exposed on a pass or he's in the wrong fit on a run. And next thing you know, the guy's hitting his forehead on the goalpost. So the idea is to keep it very simple.
Okay.
And play fast. Very simple, Bo, so you can play everything, right? What's the biggest thing under Shiano? We are doing so much.
Right.
These guys don't even know how to rep. Like, when you do a lot of stuff on defense, you can't rep those things. There's not enough practice time to every single offensive play you can get. But when you play simple scheme, 3-1, you can rep. You know what teams are going to do? They're going to run routes that are meant to beat cover 3-1. So how are we going to play them and make sure that we're just better than them? So when they run the all-go special, the back shoulder fade, which we know we're going to get on cover one or three because it's all the same, it basically three turns in the man anyway on a vert, how are we going to play the routes that we know teams like to run against, cover three or man beaters? And then you just say, hey, we're going to rep them so much through the week that we'll be so prepared that we're going to play fast and when we'll shut them down. The problem is when we're getting the game day, we're not shutting them down. They're executing. So now what?
Well, this is what I was going to. So this is where I'm at with this. So it's a simple scheme, but from what I've seen in two games, and going back to Alabama, where we had Tep Warland trying to cover Devontae Smith, it's easily manipulated, or we're easy to be manipulated in it. However you want to say that, because Joe Moorhead knew exactly what he was doing. He would take guys in motion, which would cause confusion and open up gaps the size of which Chopper could run through. Right. So.
Yep.
That was something he was using the motion to manipulate our linebackers and open up holes. Now, we saw Alabama do this. Sark did this in the national championship game where all of a sudden Tuff's trying to cover the Heisman winner. Well, you can't have that. That's not a win for you. That's not a win. So this has happened before. So, okay, we have a very simple scheme that right now is getting easily manipulated. Okay, that's a problem. We have a simple scheme where our own players are confused about what they're supposed to do. So how the hell's that happen? Well, that can't happen. If it's simple, why are we confused? How do we not know what our assignments are?
Yeah.
And we guys, you guys have all seen that, whether it's on social or you've seen some of the stuff bounce around some of these plays where we have linebackers who aren't moving until the ball's 6 yards down the field. They're stuck.
We have linebackers
that aren't hitting the
right gaps. We have D linemen that are hitting the gaps that they're not supposed to hit.
Right.
Which means that the linebackers are trying to cover up for them and fit for them, which sounds really good on paper and while holding a clicker, it's really hard on the football field. So, like, if you're, for instance, if I'm stacked in the A gap, right, which is between the center and the guard, and you have a three technique, for me, it would be Aaron Donald from time to time. Other guys, I remember just talking to Bobby about this, he used to play behind Ndamukong Suh, And if you give that three technique the opportunity to choose whatever gap he wants, the reason why I'm stacked here, coach, in the A-gap is because if they run towards me, I'm going to go hit that center in the face, and I'm going to control my A-gap, and then I'll shed and run to the ball. But if I go to run and anticipate in that A-gap, and now I have Aaron Donald in my A-gap, and then mid-step I try to adjust my angle from being downhill to more of a 45-degree to try to cover in his B-gap, what do you think that guard's going to do? He's going to pass Aaron off to the center, and now he's coming up to me. And guess what he has on me? An angle, because he's aligned wider. And now I'm cut off, and you're yelling at me, make the play in the B, play off him. What do you mean play off him? That sounds great when you're holding a clicker and you have a beer belly on the sideline. Why don't you go out there and play off him?
Yeah.
You know, so now if that's going to be the case, and you say, well, why don't you just widen out and stack them? Because I don't know. That's where they're running. Because if they run weak, guess what happens? Now Aaron's cut out of the B gap, and I'm stacking him, and now you want me to run to that A gap, and that guard has the same angle on me. So if I knew that's where they were going to run, I would line up right there. If I knew that's how I was going to play out. But you're asking me to react.
Well, it all
play
varies.
Within 4 yards. You know, so everyone has to be held accountable. That's D-line, too. And you're seeing D-linemen getting backdoored. All this stuff as well, not playing their gap. So when that happens, you know, that was one of the biggest negatives people had about, you know, Luke's defense was that, like, the D lineman doesn't penetrate. They don't penetrate because they would try to hold up the line of scrimmage. Those guys would play their gaps. Cam Hayward would play his gap. Dexter Larimore would play their gap. It would allow us to flow downhill as linebackers fast, hit our gaps, and then clean up anything that popped. And it wasn't perfect all the time, but when you let the D lineman, hey, play off him, okay, so one play he's in the A, one play he's in the B, and the next play we're both in the B, now we're both in the A, and now it's a 25-yard run. And if your safety can't save you, now it's a 70-yard touchdown run.
So if the last one's the really interesting, because this all marries, right? All marries. The defense
has to
marry.
Starting, so, then so you don't trust each other. Point.
Well, right, and so this gets to this. All right, so we're playing a simple system. Where we're confused. We're playing a simple system that's easily manipulated. We're playing a system that has a lack of adjustments where we get hit with the same thing over and over and over again. We thought it's the national championship game. We saw it against Oregon. We're playing too many guys. We're playing, what did I say? Yes, Chops, what was the stat? 26 guys?
26, yep.
Played
15 on
snaps.
Offense.
15 on offense. 26 guys played defensively. Now, you're going to have rotations. D-line is a hot day. Fine. You're going to have rotation on the defensive line. You go nickel, dime, base. My guess is you're primarily in nickel. I haven't looked at the All-22. That'd be my guess. Nevertheless, you're going to have some rotation. Not 26. So you're playing too many guys, right? Here's the last one. You said a safety to save you. Folks, and this is the hard reality, Chase Young's not walking through the door. Malik Hooker's not walking through the door. Jeff Okuda, Marshawn Lattimore, Denzel Ward, they're not walking through the door. Ryan Shazier's not at linebacker. Neither is Threes. Neither is Darren Lee or Joshua Perry. There are not pros. There are not those type of pros. So you factor all of that in, and you have the press conference that Ryan Day had yesterday, and you're going to hear from it coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Get it straight from the horse's mouth. But he's not a horse. He's a coach. The Ryan Day Show.
Thursday at noon.
The Fan. It's Bishop and Laurinaitis is What's Up.
What's up, man? What's up with you?
Sponsored by your Central Ohio Honda dealers.
All right, here's what's up on a first Friday. Ryan Day press conference yesterday getting a lot of attention, and I think justifiably. Coach Day was asked, we've gone over the defense, we've talked about it a lot. He was asked yesterday directly, is Kerry Combs still your defensive coordinator?
Yes or no, is Kerry Combs the defensive coordinator?
Yes, he's still the defensive coordinator, yes. But we're going to look at everything, and we're going to keep working towards Tulsa and figure out how the, you know, how the staff is working together, how the scheme works together, and then we'll go from there.
And lighter moment there. We'll get to some others. This was he was asked directly if he was considering staff changes right now.
It's going to be kind of overtime, yeah. And we'll get there, but right now we're just going to kind of work through it and figure out again. You know, let's have a great day of practice today. What gives us the best chance against Tulsa, and then, you know, as we get closer to the game, we'll figure out if we need to move things around for game day.
This was the one that's getting a lot of attention. He was asked about if he was going to help out on defense and what impact that would have on him. Here's that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not happy about that at all. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's part of the deal is that, you know, here for me to do what I need to do on offense, I need, you know, the defense really on point, the special teams on point. I need Mark Pantone to do a great job in recruiting. McMorrady to handle strength and conditioning, And the minute that I get taken away from those type of things, then it affects everything else that, that's going on in offense. And so, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, that you know, I'm disappointed.
That was probably the only one. There's been a lot made of this press conference. That one right there was probably the only one where I thought he answered it like an offensive coordinator, not the head coach. Does that make sense?
I think it was the biggest hint. You know, like everyone thought that, like we all know that Ryan Day is heavily involved on the offense.
Right.
But I think that that response kind of verbalizes that he is solely invested. Like he is not only, he is the offensive coordinator. And so his mindset during the week is, I don't want to worry about the defense. I know what I want it to look like, but I don't want to go worry about the defense. I'm in, you know, super deep in. He's head play caller, right? I mean, he is head decision making on that side of the court. So we have Coach Wilson. We have
who, by the way,
all the assistants over there
was an elite play caller at Oklahoma.
Delegation, yes. Right.
It was elite, but, and has been a head coach at Indiana.
Yes.
So he has people
absolutely
he can lean on in that side of the building.
But I don't think he is fully. He's leaning on for game planning. Yeah. I think he's leaning on for you know, certain coordination when it comes to the ground game and you know, passing spots in the field and mirroring together ideas and all that. But when push comes to shove, he's making the calls. Because and I don't know if that's just because that's what he wants to do, which I'm sure it is. We hired him because of his QB prowess, but this is not, and this isn't a bad thing. There's other coaches that are like this. I'm just saying it is what it is. He is the head coach who's also the offensive coordinator calling plays. And the way that he wants it to operate is he doesn't want to have to go worry and take time away from himself on the sideline when he's thinking about how do I adjust the defense, worrying about our own defense and how they're executing.
What I would say, real quick pushback on that, though, is if that is the way that you feel, and it very clearly was by the answer, and I don't blame him for it. I'm guessing that's how Lincoln Riley feels. Like, I don't want to worry about what's over there. Like, that's probably how Spurrier felt, right? That's not my – I'm going to do this. This isn't new. I mean, a lot of guys have done this. You know, I'm going to do the offense, and you handle the defense. Then when you have an opportunity to make a staff change, you got to make sure that that room has checks and balances and people in that room who can call defense, who have called it before. Look, it's not a secret, and you mentioned Rhodes as you know, an analyst or whatever, but like Saban's been doing this forever.
Yeah.
Like when somebody, he goes and hires a former head coach to be his defensive coordinator, to be his offensive coordinator, because it's the Alabama system, but they've done it before and they can adjust. Why make all the players adjust, right?
Right.
Coach adjusts to us.
Here's the other news flash.
When you make the hire and you Greg Madison leaves,
then
maybe put somebody in that room who's done it.
True. And I will say the issue is, and this is the other thing too. We can sit here and say, hey, they should have hired a co, but I guarantee some of the people that they called about being co didn't have a co title before.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, I don't think I'm going to. I don't think I'm going to be a co. Why would I leave my position where I'm at now when I can be full time DC to come be a co DC? So these guys in the coaching profession as well have their own opinions about other coordinators and other staffs and stuff, right? And although we are a luxurious job, it is not a luxurious job for someone that has been a DC at another program, right, in college football, to then say, hey, come over here and be a co. And you look and you say, hold on, you want me to be a co at a place that has had the worst season scoring defense a year ago. You want me to come there? How loyal are you to me versus that person if you're not willing to fully rip the Band-Aid off? Do I want to jump in there? Well, how will they view me? Will they view me as a new guy, like I'm some savior, and kind of resent me? There's a lot of dynamics to it.
Yeah.
So it's not right. Like, we don't know who Ryan inquired about.
No.
There was rumors that he tried to reach out to Marcus. I don't know. I haven't asked Marcus if those are true or not.
Yeah.
But who knows? Who else did he reach out? I don't know. We don't know. We don't know who he reached out to that said, no, thank you. I'll come to be full-time DC, but I won't come to be co-DC. And maybe he said, you know, I'm just not comfortable with that yet.
It doesn't even have to be a co-DC. It can just be someone who called plays before who's doing a different job.
Well, I think that's like, why they have Paul Rhodes there.
Right, but he probably needed to be on the staff. You know what I mean? I mean, they had an opportunity to do that. They made a change.
Yeah.
And they took an offensive assistant, make him a special teams coordinator.
Defensive assistant. Yes.
Yeah. They that's what they chose to do. So they've kind of made their bet on this thing.
Yeah.
But look, there's I'll give you on the other side of this quick timeout. I'm going to give you a couple of things that would make you feel very, very differently about all of this. Is all right in the world? No, it's not. Does it have to get better? Yes. But our perception is based on the reality that we've just lived. And if it's an alternate one, you feel very, very differently, and you can do it with just scheduling. We'll get into it coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
All the dumb things we say are on demand when you want them. Just utilize the computer chip we've implanted into your brain. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Pushing the limit of how many times you can say the word thing in one show.
That's the next thing.
That is the next thing.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
And join the Fan for the Ozone Tailgate on Lane for the best game day tailgate in town. Catch the pregame show with Matty Ice, Tyvus Powell, listen to live music. Watch the game if you're not headed inside. Be sure to bring cash for your favorite tailgate refreshments. The Ozone Tailgate on Lane, sponsored by Kohler, Buckeye Power Sales, White Claw, your local Columbus Hyundai dealer, and Jack Daniels. We will see you on Saturday. You feel different. If you open Tulsa, Akron, Oregon, Minnesota, you're going to feel differently. Now, would that have masked the problems? Probably. Does this force change? Yeah. Not necessarily in terms of the personnel on the staff, but the way you're going about your business. Folks, you can't play 26 guys.
No.
That has to lead to the confusion, Threes. You played the position. You've told the stories about how Luke says, James, it's the fourth quarter. We're up 40. Come on. And you're like, no.
Still tried to fight him. Why?
I'm because staying in.
Coach, hey, coach, here, let me tell you why. I set senior goals, and one of those is leading the Big Ten in tackles, and that includes this game against the Penguins, week one. So that's why I came back. Don't pull me for B-roll. And then he'd look back at me and, quit being selfish. I'm not being selfish. Being competitive. No, it's not. Okay, whatever. And then I'd walk over and I'd talk trash about him to Marcus. And we'd, you know, hope he rolled his ankle and had to be on crutches, you know, walking up the ramp. And then who knew that he'd be adopted by coach. And, you know.
And now he's estranged. You know, so now you get the whole thing.
Now he's the prodigal son, you know.
The other thing that happened here over, you know, so here's what can be fixed. I think the only thing that can be fixed right now, because you're not going to teach a new scheme. I don't believe that they're going to bring anybody else in the middle of the season. I just think that would be an incredibly panicky move. So I don't think you're going to have that. I don't think they're going to teach a new scheme. So you're going to have the scheme that you teach. And what's the best way to get rid of confusion? I would say play less people. I'm just a guy on the radio. But I would think play less people and have roles defined, that would help.
Yep. That would help. You get into a flow. You get into a rhythm. There are so many nuances to the game. And I can only speak from linebacker, but I know they exist on others as well. Like, D linemen can rotate in and out because those guys get gassed, right? Like, they get gassed. They're doing real dude work. They're in the trenches, right? Like, trying to hold up and roll your hips and withstand a double team for multiple plays in a row and then fight off and run to the ball, like, that's hard on a big human being. So I understand why they rotate. That always happens. But when you're in there and I say, hey, you know what? The first time they ran this play, and it was a power play, and the tackle came up to block me, I tried hitting him and getting over the top. That didn't work. He got me. So next time, I'm going to try to set him up like I'm doing the same thing, and I'm going to come underneath the block. It's risky, but if I make it, it'll be a big play. And then guess what? If that doesn't work, then you say, you know what? Hey, I'm having a hard time getting over that tackle, coach, when they're running that counter, and they've run it a couple times. Can we pinch our end to, like, at least have him crash down and knock him off and help me? And then you're able to communicate those things. But when you aren't in there for the second time they run it, and then you trot back out there, and that guy comes off the field, guess what? That linebacker ain't telling an adjustment to the coach or a recommendation, because that's the first time he saw the counter play. So by the time I see it the second time, but it's the third time they've run it, I'm just trying that next thing, that I was, you know, that technique thing. So there is a flow to it. That's why you see running backs talking about the flow of the game. Like, why do you think Jonathan Taylor kept building as a game went on? Because he saw, oh, they're in that defense again. And you know what? Last time I ran this power, that Mike linebacker ran too far. So that backside gap's there. Coach, let's call it again. Let's hope they're in that defense. Because I'm going to hit it right here. Like, you're constantly gathering information throughout a game.
Let them gather.
And that's it. Like, last time, you know, it's like first time they show something on tape. A lot of times teams do the same exact stuff. They just window dress it. So 3-by-1, tight formation, maybe they run a little stick route, spot route. Boom, dang it, I didn't recognize it because they motioned to it this time. You know, last week they just lined up in it. So then guess what? The second time that guy trots over to make it 3-by-1, oh, I'm jumping it. I'm jumping the stick. It's coming. It's coming. Boom. You jump it. Pick. Right? But if you're not out there for the second time, you're not jumping it.
One other thing real quickly here, and I know we're up against it. If I would have told you on Friday that Oregon's going to score 33,
yep.
Do you think we would have won?
Say that again?
Because I do. If I would have told you Friday, Oregon's going to score 33 points in the shoe, do you think we'll win? What would you say?
Yes, I would have said yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because we're going to score 45.
Yes.
42. 49.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So we're talking all of this about the defense, and it ain't right, right? Yep. But we weren't great scoring the football either. And you can move it up and down the field all day long, but if you don't get in the dang end zone, it don't matter much. 28 in today's college football? 29? That ain't enough. You need to be in the 40s to win in college football now.
Yep.
So we moved it like crazy, 480 yards passing, all this stuff. But we didn't put it in the paint.
No.
So that is part of this too. You know, it's the first Friday we've talked about defense all week. Should have scored more points.
Mm-hmm.
You can move it, but money downs, third downs, extending drives, and in the red zone, you got to score.
Yeah.
So, look, the point of all of this, this isn't to point out, and it's that football is team. It's the whole thing, man. The defense ain't right, hasn't been right. We've given you some solutions on how to fix it. I think Ryan Day's one of the smartest guys that I've ever been around. He's a really good football coach and a really smart football coach. He'll get that fixed.
Yep.
But you got to score more than 28 at home. Ain't going to do it. Got to score more. So that's part of it too. We do. We change gears. We get to the NFL. A little higher or lower on a first Friday. Get your Hey Guys questions in too. They can be football related. Don't have to just be fun and games. Although we like those as well. Second hour up next. Bishman Laurinaitis right here on the Fan.
Top shelf conversation from top shelf gentlemen.
That's a pretty emphatic situation.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Second hour here on a first Friday. Get your Hey Guys questions in. Hashtag Hey Guys to Chopper at 971BLS. That's it. Join the Fan 10 TV and the Ohio Education Association. We honor classroom heroes in these times, teachers and educators. Need the support and recognition more than ever. Nominate your classroom hero at 971thefan.com. Before we get to higher or lower NFL edition of the program, I just did see this on the Dan Patrick this morning saying that there is mutual interest between James Franklin and USC.
Ooh, of course there is.
There would be some mutual interest there.
You don't think James Franklin would look great out there? And
I think
that'd be a good fit for him.
Agreed, and I think he's done his job.
Yes.
He's stabilized Penn State.
Now does that get Luke into state college?
Well, from the on
is
the
that
Franklin
a better job
side
in Cincinnati
it,
in the Big 12? Here's a question that no one's asking: if the Big 12 keeps their Power 5 status, which a lot of people are saying they're going to, does he have a better path at Penn State?
Okay, there's several things to get into here, real quickly, and we'll get into this at greater length at 11 o'clock. But let's just say this: if Franklin were to go to USC, I wouldn't blame him. Like he's hitting his head against a ceiling. He has had to watch a kid that he recruited at quarterback go be a Heisman finalist here.
Yeah.
He's got another kid who he's got committed in Medina through like 6 touchdowns last week in their win and is a 5-star kid who now Quinn Ewers reclassifies. He's got to worry about Ohio State going and getting him. So he's doing all the work and he's not seeing that. He's seeing Pennsylvania kids, McCord, Fleming, come here.
That's right.
So I don't blame him, and he's stabilized the program. He's got a good program at Penn State. That thing could have went a million different ways. I think he's done a good job there. So I don't blame him for that, and I think he'd do well there. I think he'd recruit really well there, and I think he wouldn't have to deal with running into Ohio State, and he wouldn't have to deal with some of the shortcomings that the Penn State program has. On the Luke thing, would that entice Luke? You'd know better than me. My hunch is that it would be one that would you'd go, well, you got to listen. You got to listen to Penn State. That's – in the region, it's not the type of city I would imagine that they would want, that Amy and the kids would want to live in, but that's a job that you got to consider. I'll give you another name, Jeff Hafley.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. At Boston College, we know what he's about. I think he can recruit young. I don't know Jeff Hafley as intimately as I know Luke.
Right.
The big question is, I don't know, this is just ignorance, this isn't anything else, I just don't know the Catholic school system in Happy Valley.
Right, from Luke's perspective.
From Luke's perspective, that is a that is something of great importance. So that's why a lot of times, you know, you say to yourself, what's the job that would entice him? That's why Notre Dame comes up. It's a natural fit for Luke if Brian Kelly steps down. That's why I had a buddy yesterday text me and said, the battle between Cincinnati and Notre Dame, whoever loses, Marcus or Luke will be told to kindly leave the chat for who will replace BK. And I'm like, stop. But it's fascinating because these are the jobs that are geographically, right, when you start to think of both at Notre Dame and at Penn State, you can still recruit Ohio. And so the knack, and that was a knack for Mark D'Antonio. Let me get the kids that are getting overlooked, you know, by Ohio State, that there's not enough offers to offer every good football player in Ohio.
Yeah.
There's just not. And even so, there's not enough offers to offer some of the elite ones. You talk about the kid at Medina. The reason why he wasn't at first is because we had Quinn Ewers coming in. When you offer the number one overall recruit that you've ever gotten, and you say, well, we don't have room for another. You know, like, I understand it's the best QB to come through Medina in the school's history, and we usually want to keep those guys here. But
yeah,
we also got Quinn Ewers, who is the top QB recruit ever. So, sorry. It's just the timing was bad for you to be a Buckeye. And then all of a sudden he reclassifies, and you kind of try to slide back in the DMs and say, hey, so about that, are you sure you want to go to state college?
Yeah.
You know, like, those are some of the kids that Luke would be able to – and it's the same philosophy, let alone the relationships he's established at Cincinnati. And then you're able to take it a little more national, and you don't think that that's that same grit and that same personality that Luke has doesn't work in rural PA?
Of course. Come on. It would work in Western PA. It would work in Philadelphia. Yep. It would work in Maryland. It would, of course, yeah. I mean, I think Halfley and Fickell would be the two guys. I mean, you call them both right away if Penn State, and I think you have to listen to both of those jobs. Because here's the deal, and we'll get more into Luke in a sec in the 11 o'clock hour, and we'll play his comments on the Cincinnati thing, but he can't. He probably don't want to wait his whole life for the hope that he can come back to Ohio State. Because who knows? Who knows how many opportunities you get at that, right? That may never happen again. Ryan Day may be here 15 years. And at that point, you're not doing that if you're Luke. At that point, you're too old for that job. So he's going to have to make the decision, and he's got a great job right now.
Yep.
Right? So you have to decide, this might be my one shot to get a job like this. And do I want to do it? It's a very similar conversation that Chris Peterson had to have at Boise State. And he said no to a lot of stuff. And then he took Washington. Now, that he got him to a college football playoff. I don't know how much more you can expect at Washington. He got him there. Right?
Yep.
But he turned down SC. He turned down those type of jobs along the way.
Yep.
So that's the position that Luke's in right now. And it's going to be fascinating to see what it does. But I thought I should get that to you on the James Franklin Mutual Interest, and I expected that there would be. Time for a little NFL higher, lower. Hit it, Chopper.
All right, boys. This is going with the ESPN NFL Nation Power Rankings. The Buccaneers, they come in at number two. Higher or lower?
Well, look, to be the man, you got to beat the man. That's the deal, right? Super Bowl champions. To me, Kansas City's better.
Yep.
I watched them both play. I think Kansas City's better. So I have no problem with Kansas City being where they are. I think Tampa Bay's fine at number two. I think it's appropriate. I understand they're the Super Bowl champions. But I think Kansas City's better.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's where, when you look at the two teams, that's why it's so hard to judge the Buccaneers, because I still have in my mind how they looked all season last season until the Super Bowl. You know, even in the playoffs, like, I guess Green Bay, they looked really good too.
Yeah.
But it's like they found this, you know, this pass rush. And there at times it showed, you know, opening night, but at times, like, you still see the issues in the secondary. It's weird, you know, like, they'll get to the playoffs and then they'll probably try to flip a switch. But you know how I feel about teams that try to flip a switch, but who knows, with Giselle's voodoo and all that stuff, they make it happen. But I think Kansas City is a better team, and I don't disagree with the 1-2 decision there.
The Bills are the highest ranked team with a loss at fifth. Higher or lower?
I vehemently disagree. I think that if you're going to put the highest one loss team, it should be the Browns. The Browns were in control against the best team that you have ranked number one up there. And the Bills lost when they were up at for a half and then fell apart and got beat by more than a score by the 8 team. I'm not sure about the logic. I mean, there's not a lot of logic out there at times, you know, in today's world, but that's one of them. It's kind of like the AP poll. These two right. teams play head to head, you know? And one is, wait, what? How are they still, huh? Anyway.
So, Buffalo lost at home to Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Pittsburgh got a pretty poor game out of Ben Roethlisberger. And in part, and because of that, really not much from Najee Harris. Mm-hmm. A lot of that was Ben couldn't hit the broad side of the barn. And yeah. Najee was hoping on these release things he'd miss him left and right. Not that I was paying attention because I have him on fantasy or not. But that happened over and over and over again. Pittsburgh didn't play particularly well, and they won.
Yeah.
How the heck's Pittsburgh below Buffalo? That makes no sense.
Yep.
And you're right. The best one-loss team is Cleveland.
Yep.
But that makes no sense. They need to be lower than five.
Yes. And Josh Allen did not look good.
No,
he missed some
not.
Guys. He missed throws.
Yeah.
It almost looked like he reverted to the Josh Allen the year before, you know, where he had thought about accuracy and all that. So, you know, I think that's the issue.
Since you guys were talking about it, Cleveland is sixth, higher or lower?
Well, I said they...
Just by nature of having Buffalo.
By having Buffalo. I think they should be... I think fifth is where they should be. I'm fine. So, the way that this goes Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Seattle 3. I would have the Rams ahead of Seattle. So, I would go Rams, then Same. Seahawks. And then
You know what? I'd actually have them sixth. I'd have... You know, if you're going to have, like, one lost teams, I just think the Arizona Cardinals, with the way they beat a playoff team, manhandled a playoff team... was super impressive, too. So it wouldn't bother me if you had the Cardinals up ahead of the Browns, you know? But regardless, I'm good with the Browns being at five.
Yeah. It should be higher.
Other Ohio team, the Bengals are 24th, just one spot higher than the Vikings, who they beat.
Well, at least they're higher than the Vikings, right? I mean, good job there. They beat the team that's right below them. Well, that would make sense. As you look at the teams above them, I think they're better than the Washington football team. Now, that Washington football team, that D-line is insane, but when you put Tyler Heineke in there now instead of, or Taylor Heineke, is Taylor? Tyler? I don't know, it's one of them.
You said it, pal.
I don't know, I said a both. One of them will catch. But, you know, I think there's a little bit of fool's love right now with Philadelphia.
I see the same about Vegas, too.
Yep. So
it's a little bit of foolishness.
But I'm fine with 24. I mean, they have to... I'll put it that they have to overcome the, you know, they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt. You know what I mean? They have to overcome their reputation. So I'm okay with it.
I could have them a little higher. You could convince me they're, I think they're probably better. You mentioned the football team, Carolina. I think they're more dangerous than Carolina is offensively, although I think Carolina is well coached. Philly, I think, is a little bit of a, you mentioned them. Same with Denver. I think there's some really bad teams in the NFL, and some of the teams I mentioned took advantage of that. I think Cincinnati, on a week-to-week basis, is pretty terrifying. To play.
Yeah.
Because of what they have offensively.
See?
And if Burrow played, there were some throws Burrow made that were just incredible. Not for the velocity, but because of the anticipation. He made a throw to Jamar Chase where Chase hadn't even begun to make his break, and the ball was already ready to be released. I saw Ben Baby tweet that out yesterday. That's awesome. That's awesome. That means Joe Noe has complete command of what he wants to do offensively. That's a problem for a lot of people.
We'll get two more in here. The Texans rose all the way up to number 29. Higher or lower?
Real quick.
Go ahead.
Bo, do you know who had a really good game for them? He's a rookie.
For
Wide
Cincy?
Receiver. No, for Houston.
Nico
Collins.
I didn't watch.
Do you know where Nico Collins went to school?
Oh, boy. Another one of those.
Yeah, he went to Michigan. It's amazing how they had Nico Collins and Donovan Peoples-Jones on the same wide receiver core. They both did nothing in college, yet both are, you would say, rising in the National Football League. Huh. There must be something called development that's being missed up there.
They had Nico Collins and Zach Charbonnet on the same team a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Three overtimes versus Rutgers. Chop.
Look, I think this is the least talented team in football, but they've got vets. Right? They've got vets. Yeah. And vets are going to... Vets know what they're doing. What you saw from Jacksonville was a team that didn't know what it was doing.
Yep.
So that's how this happened. I'm guessing this will revert back to the norm this week, and I think Cleveland will hammer them. But at the same time, you got to tip your hat to some veterans who played hard.
I'll put it this way. They should be up 1-1. And it is, this surprises me.
Better than New York.
Because right. They're better than the Giants.
Might be better than Atlanta, too, based on what we saw.
I'm with you. Atlanta looked like stinky,
quit.
Hot trash.
A lot of quit.
Yep, like the diaper pail that I can smell again.
Last one's a twofer. Packers fell from 4 to 11th, while the Saints went from 19th to 9. Higher or lower?
Well, so what do you do with – what do you make of Green? I mean, I think I'm fine with New Orleans where they are. I think it was a pretty masterful job out of Sean Payton, and I think it was a pretty disgusting job out of Green Bay the way they played. Let's just center on – Green Bay's got to be below Arizona based on performance. But let's just center on what – how do you make sense of that?
It's hard to. They definitely should be lower. I have them below Arizona. When it comes to the Packers, I can't make sense. Gosh, I forgot Rondale Moore's in Arizona.
So many weapons.
Goodness, so many weapons over there. Like, they have literally, Kingsbury has like his perfect, it's like he's playing video games. I got my speed sweep guy in Rondale Moore. I got the receivers on the outside. Like,
what a novel concept. Hire a coach, draft a quarterback, and put him in the best position to succeed. And I don't necessarily love Kingsbury.
No, it doesn't make sense. We can't do that.
But
that's not,
you know.
We don't do that in the NFL, though.
Jeez.
We can't do that.
Let him live.
Gosh, good job on them. I was so wrong in that situation.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you're wrong yet. I don't know that you're wrong yet.
That's true.
Let's reserve judgment until we see how he handles some success.
So I like this. I like this because it's week to week, right? This needs to be week to week. And if the Packers need to be lower based on how they perform, the Saints are still really good job out of Sean Payton. I'm almost having a harder time wrapping my head around Winston's, what is it, 5 touchdown passes, but yet only throwing for like 130, like 140 or whatever it was. So
I think he did it on purpose.
Yeah, is it real?
I think Sean did it on purpose. Well, I don't know if it is
too.
Or not, but I think Sean's like, I'm going to get this guy rolling. I'm going to get this guy 10 feet tall and bulletproof by throwing 5 touchdowns. Like, they threw it in the red zone, inside the
That's
they threw
true.
It That's over and over and over. That's intentional. Like, they didn't let anybody run it in. They threw it in every time. So, I think he did that on purpose. He doesn't do anything on accident.
Well, that's for damn sure. I know that.
No, he doesn't. All right, good job.
You don't even go over to the Greenbrier on accident.
No.
When there's a cute girl named Miss West Virginia interested in,
that's why you
take everything to her.
Well,
honey,
it's not hard.
I value
take a
you
team.
So much. I'm going to make the Saints organization lengthen this airport over here at the Greenbrier so that our big plane can land because it's not up to FAA regulations.
Right.
And I'm going to bring my team there because it's cooler.
It's
up
cooler.
Here in West Virginia.
Yeah.
And I just, that's how much I adore you.
Yeah.
They're
there
not
you
married.
What you know what I heard? I heard Chris Long say this. He was talking smack about West Virginia, and he said that the John Denver song, Country Roads, is actually written about Western Virginia and not West Virginia, which I'd never heard.
He's the biggest conspiracy guy in the world anyway. So it's pretty funny.
I didn't know that. If that's true, and he said it must be. I mean, he said it.
I mean, he is a proud Virginian, so.
Yeah. Coming up next, I heard something the NFL is doing that is that I think that makes you think, and certainly might make you think about the future of Ohio Stadium. So we get to that. The NFL big in the TV in week one as well. That's coming up next. Austin Gale at the bottom of the hour from PFF. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
The only workplace in America to participate in the Doorknob Fart Game. And we also play office basketball and sometimes do radio. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Threes and Uncle Bo. If you know, you know. You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan. We're going to tell you about my good friends over there, my guy Buddy and DeLacy. They are both just dropping incredible deals on all their models, Highlanders, Tacomas. I love my Tundra. Got a beautiful white Tundra out here right now, parked in front of the barn. It's gorgeous. If you're in the market for a new car, take advantage of those. But don't forget, if you've thought about selling your car, trading it in, they will buy it from you, even if you don't want to buy one of theirs. So stop by and see my good friends over there at Germain Toyota, east of downtown, at 5711 Scarborough Boulevard or on the line, germaintoyota.net.
All right, time for a pop-up Chops movie review. Go, Chops.
All right, guys, last night I watched Malignant, the most delightful, terrible, horrendous, fun movie I've seen in a long time. From the director of The Conjuring and Saw and Aquaman, it felt like James Wan pretending to be Sam Raimi trying to imitate a James Wan movie. With a plot so absurd, by the end, I was just left baffled and laughing, and the marketing for this movie does not do it justice. Basically, mysterious, brutal murders are linked to a woman who was in a psychiatric hospital as a child. But are the murders done by her, her imaginary friend, or some paranormal being? Watch and find out. You never know when you're entering a so-bad-it's-good movie, especially when it's made by a big studio, in this case Warner Brothers, and it has a competent and accomplished director attached to it. Then you watch it, and you're confused at first. Then you think, oh, this movie isn't very good. Then it clicks, and you go, oh, wait, this is actually a grand old time, and you just sit back and enjoy it. I don't want to oversell it, but if you enjoy films where you're questioning how this was even greenlit to be made, then this is for you. It's framed and has the sleekness of a James Wan horror movie, but the acting is B-movie at best, and the plot makes no sense. It's not scary, like, at all. But I was shocked, confused, and cackling throughout, sometimes in the same scene. There's also some ridiculously over-the-top action mixed in that feels like it would be more in place with a Matrix movie. I don't know. It's on HBO Max right now. Grading it seems pointless because I don't know if they were even trying to make a serious movie. Either way, Malignant gets a B.
There you, well, it's all about the if you enjoy the experience, though, right? So if you enjoyed it, then that's however, whether that was the intended enjoyment or not.
Yes, and I would recommend it to anybody who likes so bad it's good movies, as I said.
So it's a Sharknado situation, although we
I don't think it's on purpose, or maybe it is.
Right. We don't know if they were trying to be, but that's
the intent solution. Is hard to judge in these situations.
All right. I know we have Austin Gale coming up shortly. I just want to share this with you. By the way, NFL numbers over the weekend, huge, up 7%. One other lesson that sometimes what's on Twitter and what's reality don't match up. The Manning Brothers broadcast, which I watched up, which was the craze of social media, the regular Monday Night Football hammered it, crushed it, you know, because, and that's just kind of a lesson that what's on Twitter isn't necessarily reality for the kids out there. One thing I wanted to run by you, though. So, I was talking to someone who would know these things. The NFL, from a sports science standpoint, is very concerned about what's happening with ligaments. We saw Jeff Okuda, what happened to him, and the amount of Achilles and these type of things is happening. And one of the there's two things they're doing, and I want you to weigh in on quickly here, my friend. Number one, they're reassessing cleats.
Yep.
So they don't want cleats that stick. They want cleats that slide.
They've been doing this. By the way, they started this back when I was still playing. They had
been going on that long.
Yep, it's been going on for that long. They had helmet studies, and they had a turf / cleat studies, and they had actually tried to educate the equipment guys to say, I know that linebacker wants to wear that speed cleat. This has been a battle since I was in college.
Yeah.
Bobby and AJ wearing the Vapors that are meant for DBs. Those are meant for guys that weigh 210 pounds and less.
You know, well, they're sweet, and I'm going to wear them. All right, give me Louis, give me. I'm taking four of those.
Anyway, and so we were supposed to wear the bigger model, a little higher top, a little more supportive on the ankle. I don't want to wear those. Okay, so this has been a battle.
And the length of the actual cleat, they're bringing those down. And the cleat pattern, they're adding more nubs to the bottom of a cleat as opposed to so few. So that you, basically what they're doing is they're promoting sliding, which is going to be a tough battle with players because players don't want to slide. But that's what they're trying to push. The other thing that they're trying to push.
You know what slides naturally?
Feet. And grass. Well, and that's the other thing I'm putting to you right now. Yes. That's the other thing. Yes. So this is – the NFL is not mandating, but pretty close. We're getting rid of the turf. We're getting rid of it.
Except – I'm assuming except for the indoor.
Except for the places where you have no choice.
Yeah.
But any place you have a choice or any place it can be done, make sure
technically,
you get it.
So here's my question. So the Rams did turf.
Right.
And you say to yourself, you have perfect temperature year-round, and you have the transparent glass on the roof. You just bring in some, I guess looking back, though, you can't install a new drain. That would have been pre-planned with drainage. But they could have done it.
They could have done it.
Yeah. They could have done a natural, just water draining, irrigation in there. You're not even having to do the Cardinals thing in the Vegas thing where they wheel it out. That's pricey.
Well, but
you have constant sunlight. You have natural air because the stadium isn't enclosed. And you have
the best place in the world to grow grass, frankly, look in Pasadena.
Right. Yes.
So, and so that brings it to Ohio Stadium. I know they're going to put new turf in that place. We got to figure out a way to do grass. Can't we figure that out here? I know it's below the water table. I've heard all the stuff. There's got to be a way.
Well, with Scott's just down the road, you think they would have a chemical for that.
I think we'd have, what is it, agronomy? I'm pretty sure we got a pretty good agronomy group. At the school, right? Can we figure out how to grow some grass at this place? I mean, it just pains me when I look around college football and I see all this turf everywhere. You talked about the Texas one. There's no reason for it. You're in Austin.
It's money, Bo. It saves them money. That's what the whole
turf company said. Enough, though, and there has to be some – look, I mean, look what happened to Proctor. Like, I'm not saying all of this stuff is – it's not all ligament bone. It's not all turf-related, but there is scientific fact that turf is worse than grass, and it's not close.
Yep.
So do the right thing. Austin Gale, up next, director of content, PFF. We'll go around week one of the NFL. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on the Fan.
Telling it like it is, even if that makes you uncomfortable. Common Man and Tebow.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. The linebacker, the legend, the liquor cabinet. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Well, Bishop James Laurinaitis with you here. Time to head out on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Always love talking to the guys from PFF. Austin Gale, Director of Content at PFF, joining us now on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Austin, thanks for taking the time. Week one, we've had a couple of days to kind of absorb it all. We'll get into the specifics with the Browns and the Bengals and our local teams here in a second. Give me one thing that surprised you that you saw now that you've got a couple of days on week one, and maybe one thing that you said, boy, I had a feeling that's how that would go.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise for me was Atlanta Falcons, 3-point favorites over the Philadelphia Eagles, getting absolutely bludgeoned by Jalen Hurts and that Eagles offense. Jalen Reagor looked good. He's being used more closer to the line of scrimmage. I love that he's being used on screens and leveraging his yak ability. Devontae Smith also playing well. That offensive line was absolutely dominant. And defensively, Javon Hargrave had one of the best games of his career. The back end benefited from a ton of pressure up front. This Eagles team, I don't think, competes in the NFC East. I think it's the Cowboys' division to lose, but I don't think they're going to be the doormat that maybe I expected going in. And then I honestly think going into this year, you said we talk about the Browns later. Let's talk about them now. This is a really good football team, a team that should compete with the Kansas City Chiefs to be the best team in the AFC. And I know they didn't win this week, but losing Tredrick Wills did not help. Obviously not having Odell Beckham Jr. did not help. Some could say that's their best punch at the Chiefs. I still think they can perform better. That offense, specifically Baker Mayfield, played well above expectation. And defensively, arguably one of the best defensive lines right behind the Pittsburgh Steelers. And on the back end, Greg Newsome having a really good game, the rookie out of Northwestern. This Browns team, if it weren't for Patrick Mahomes, we'd be talking about as the Super Bowl favorite in the AFC. But still, I think we'll be really competitive down the stretch.
Austin, one of the games that's hard not to overreact to is what happened with Green Bay and New Orleans. What team performance there is more realistic to you? Is it New Orleans being that efficient and dominant with Jameis Winston at quarterback not turning the ball over? Or is it the Packers are going to have issues all season long? Which one of those things kind of rings more true after watching the tape?
Yeah, I think the New Orleans Saints thing are going to be better than people expected. I think people forget how bad Drew Brees was in his last year with New Orleans, obviously before the season where Jameis Winston's now taking over. You know, you look at Jameis Winston in that game, multiple really successful deep passes down the football field. And all of last season, Drew Brees had two passes completed that traveled more than 30 yards in the air. Jameis Winston did that in week one. Like, he is already having that success down the field, and that makes this offense go. You know, you can talk about the underneath stuff and the slants and, you know, hitting Alvin Kamara out of the backfield. That's great. But when safeties are playing up and they're not afraid of the deep ball, it makes it that much harder for the offense to be efficient. I think with Jameis Winston, he's no Drew Brees. I'm not saying put the Hall of Fame jacket on him now, but he has the arm talent to actually hit all areas of the football field. And if he can maintain this efficiency, he can be a legitimate juggernaut for this New Orleans Saints team. They're not winning that division. Tampa Bay's the best team in the NFC, but still one team that could sneak into the playoffs and actually do some damage.
Austin, let's go back to the Browns now. You know, we all know the three mistakes. You muff a punt, Nick Chubb fumbles, and then the interception that seals it at the end. And you still cover the spread, and we're in a position to beat a team that didn't have any turnovers. You held them to some field goals. You made Patrick Mahomes punt. To me, that's a win. There's a lot of consternation about what Joe Woods did defensively. But you hit on something that I want to tackle, and that's Greg Newsome and what he gives. They did zero receiving yards when Greg Newsome was covering a receiver for Kansas City. Denzel Ward, I think it was around 40, 41 on him. When you look at the plan, and keep in mind, Ronnie Harrison didn't play safety more than five plays. So that exactly what the – and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, I think, was on the field for 30-some percent of the snaps. When you think about what they did defensively and what they will do if they play again, how will it differ?
I do think they did a really good job of forcing pressure onto Patrick Mahomes. It's the only way. I mean, it's very similar to Tom Brady. Like, having Patrick Mahomes in clean pockets for more than, you know, 50-60% of his dropbacks, he's going to beat you. Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill are going to beat you. They're going to get open, and he's going to find them down the football field wherever he wants. And now, which is, you know, with Jadeveon Clowney, with Myles Garrett, this front four, I think they can get pressure on Patrick Mahomes. And you saw that. Orlando Brown Jr. had one of the worst games of his career playing left tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. Lucas Niang, this is a completely rebuilt offensive line. They have five new starters shifted around to different positions, and I think the Browns took advantage of that. Now, down the stretch, I think you saw them lose gas, and you did not see the pressure that you saw early in the game. But if you can maintain those levels of pressure against Kansas City and limit the boneheaded mistakes like the, you know, muff punt, like the turnovers they had, this team wins that football game, honestly. I think if Jedrick Wills stays healthy, that's another big benefactor as well.
Austin, out of the rookie quarterbacks who started and played, I still don't know what Chicago is doing with Justin Fields, you know, bringing him in, basically using him as a running quarterback or kind of a certain package. It doesn't make sense to me. But just out of the quarterbacks, the rookies that played, who impressed you the most?
I think Mac Jones was the most impressive. I don't think he obviously didn't bring home the win against Miami, but still, Brian Flores was throwing everything at him in the kitchen sink, and still he maintained a lot of success against that really, really good defense. And he didn't do anything otherworldly, wasn't a ton of significantly impressive balls on his tape, but still he limited mistakes and kept the New England Patriots in that game. And you compare that to, you know, Zach Wilson really struggled under pressure against the Carolina Panthers, made a handful of boneheaded decisions, was inaccurate. Trevor Lawrence had three of the worst interceptions, I think, of his, like, football career in that game. He was pressing. He also was struggling a bit under pressure, a little bit inaccurate on some of those throws. And then you obviously look at Beal Corder or use kind of his, you know, circus additions. And here and there, Trey Lance, Justin Fields didn't play enough to really give them the nod.
Austin, what'd you make of the Bengals offense and Joe Burrow in week one?
Here's a take. It's still bad. Like, this Bengals offense is not good. Like, Joe Burrow had a arguably below-average game. This offensive line was not all that impressive outside of Jonah Williams, and they ran on early downs at the highest rate of any team in the NFL. And while, you know, Joe Mixon had some success, he's the highest-rated running back in week one, that's a very volatile way to win football games, to run the football as often as they did and have limited success through the air, a ton of checkdowns, low average at the target. You know, outside of that Jamar Chase, you know, touchdown reception, I don't think it was all that impressive from Joe Burrow. There are still concerns with this Bengals team. I live here in Cincinnati. That's where PFF is based. The Cincinnati Bengals sent out emails for Super Bowl tickets. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yes. Build the hype.
I think this Bengals team has a lot of concerns, both offensively and defensively. You know, you look at the Bengals offense ranked, what, 20th in EPA per play this past week. They need to improve. Joe Burrow needs to improve. Zach Taylor needs to improve if they are going to beat good teams in the AFC.
Austin, what defensive player? Give me a defensive player, any position, that just graded off the charts this week.
I have no other answer outside of my guy, Derwin James. He was fantastic in his debut of the 2021 season. One of my favorite players in the NFL. The best safety in the NFL when healthy. I'll say it again. The best safety in the NFL when healthy. And now, paired with Brandon Staley and that defense, oh my goodness. He is on his way to comeback player of the year, defensive player of the year. I think Derwin James can legitimately be one of the best defensive players in the NFL this year. I also will shout out Max Crosby, the edge defender for the Las Vegas Raiders. Nearly single-handedly won that game for them on defense, had the highest graded game of his young career, and also 13 total pressures against the combination of Alejandro Villanueva and Ronnie Stanley. Formerly one of the best pass protectors in the NFL, his first game back since injury made him look foolish. I do think this Raiders defense far exceeded expectations against a very good Ravens offensive line.
Austin, appreciate you, man. Thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, that's Austin Gale, Director of Content at PFF. We do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
We know everything about you. We know you love the Buckeyes. We know you love the Jackets. We know you're wearing a red shirt. I just freaked the hell out of someone. The Fan. Two legends, one show.
Well, it's all a lie.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing. Go, Chops.
Bishop and Laurinaitis. Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Geico Insurance.
Here we go on a first Friday. The NFLPA has determined Josh Gordon has completed his NFL monitored treatment program and recommends he be reinstated by the NFL. Thing or not a thing?
Not a thing. It's been forever since he was. He was dominant, but it's been forever. I'm not convinced Josh Gordon loves football, but just what I know about all the situations surrounding him. But it's his best way to make money, and I would suggest that some of the things I've seen. I'll tell you a quick story. When he was with the Browns the last time around, go look at how little money, considering how little money Josh Gordon's actually made.
Yeah.
In his career. Like, he's been around a long time, but he was not a first-round pick. He's never gotten a contract. He's been suspended a ton. So go look at how little money he made. And he pulled in to Berea before he was traded in a brand-new Bentley. Now, someone could have loaned him that, certainly, or whatever. The point is, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing? So my feeling on this is that he just – this is his best way of making money. He has a skill set. It's a diminishing skill set. And he's got to continue to try and do it while he can.
He's 30 years old for a guy that hasn't played a ton of football, and you can't rely on him. That's the cold hard truth of what NFL front office people are going to say.
Yeah.
So not only before you kept getting chances because you had this elite set of skills. Well, the last tape you've had on film, like, it's diminished somewhat, and now you're 30. I just think a lot of teams are going to look and say, "No, that's just we'll pass, we'll pass."
Well, Bo, now I feel like I shouldn't have bought my Bentley. The Athletics, Matt Brown with this. Auburn at Penn State is one. Auburn's first Big Ten road trip since 1931 at Wisconsin.
Great
two,
game.
Only the third time a ranked SEC team has visited a ranked Big Ten team in conference at the time of the game.
Wow.
Joining 2011 Bama at Penn State and 1965 Georgia at Michigan. Thing or not a thing?
We need more of this.
Yes, of course. All of this is a huge thing, but this goes both ways. When's the last time a ranked Big Ten team played on the road at the SEC? So it's both ways, right? It's always framed in this way that the SEC won't come up here. Normally when we play those teams, we do it at neutral sites. We had LSU and Wisconsin at Lambeau. You know, that's the way those things go. We've tried to do home and homes. We tried with Tennessee. There's a Georgia. There's a Bama one down the road.
They backed out, didn't
they? They did. Tennessee backed out.
Soft. Yeah. Whereas my linebacker coach, assistant linebacker coach, Joe Bowden, who's now at Tennessee State with Eddie, soft.
Al Wilson ain't walking through the door at Tennessee these days, buddy.
No, you're so soft, you don't even get the T. It's just S-O-F-F.
Right.
Like a comfy, nice little, nice.
This is going to be awesome.
He'd call people Charmin.
See, there you go. This is going to be awesome, though. I wish there was more of this.
Be great.
They're the two most liked conferences.
Yep.
Adam Schefter tweeted, league sources believe Chiefs OC Eric Bieniemy will emerge as a head coaching candidate for USC. Bieniemy is from Southern California and has told confidants in the past that USC is one of the only college jobs that might interest him. Thing or not a thing?
I'm going to you on this. You've called Chief games with Westwood One, right? So you probably got a chance to talk to Eric Bieniemy.
No. Come on. Not radio.
Oh, they didn't
only
give
have
you
so
any
much
that?
Time. No, they don't talk to the radio people,
oh,
man.
Sad.
Just television.
I hate to see that.
You know?
What do you make of this? Do you think he's got? He must not interview well because he interviews for a lot of jobs. He hasn't gotten one.
Yeah, I don't.
What's the? I don't know what the reason would be.
I don't know. I'll put it this way. I think that the athletic director at USC will go for Luke Fickell or James Franklin, maybe even Matt Campbell, depending on how Iowa State looks the rest of the year, right? They still got all year to evaluate. They don't have to rush to make a decision because all these other college coaches are going to deny this job anyway until the end of the season, right? So there's no rush for the athletic director to make a decision. If all these other guys that you have on your list of college dudes that are in the college world, right, say no, then maybe you say, I'm at USC, how do I make a splash? It's good for him to know, hey, you know what, Bieniemy would be interested. Huh, good to know. But I'm not sure. Interest and also saying the money makes sense and it's a right fit, I don't know. To me, I see Eric Bieniemy as a head coach in the National Football League. But that's just me.
I think he would be intriguing there. He's
absolutely
a Southern California
would.
Guy, if memory serves. He played at Colorado, was great. And I think that he would.
I agree.
I think he could recruit it. I definitely think he could recruit it.
Of course
he
could.
Yeah.
Just FaceTime with Pat Mahomes every time you're on a trip.
Right.
ESPN's Cole Kublik pointing this out. 13 AP ranked teams have lost in 2021, the most all time through the first 2 weeks of a season.
Love
thing
it.
Or not a thing?
Big thing. I think despite even what we've seen with Alabama, and we're giving them so much credit, maybe Miami just stinks too. I think it's a wide open year in college football.
Yeah.
I do. I don't see super team. I don't see And the big key there is there aren't the quarterbacks we've had the last couple of years. There aren't the skill position players we've had the last couple
of
years.
Which I'm in favor of. I love this.
I love it.
I love this. I think it's great. And here's the biggest test for Alabama, okay? If Michigan State beats Miami, Florida, then I need to hear the national people tone it back versus saying, oh, Alabama just beat them so bad they ruined their whole season. You know, like, let's wait to judge what the Miami Hurricanes are off of this weekend against Sparty.
Yep. From Adam Schefter, an announcement will be made during halftime of Thursday night's Giants-Washington football team game that will involve the future of the Hard Knocks series per a league official. Thing or not a thing?
In season, the full season following. Let's do it.
You may be onto something. I think they're going to get rid of it in the traditional sense.
Yep.
I think they're going to
follow a team for a full year.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I think that's got a little bit of juice to it. That's a big-time series there. You've seen this. The F1 series that's on Netflix is wildly popular.
Yeah.
You've seen some of the Amazon series where they follow, you know, teams, Notre Dame football and others throughout the entire season. I think you're probably onto something. That would be something that where there's a weekly show around a team. I think there's some juice for that.
Yep.
And you can do it. It's not that hard.
Mm-hmm. What about a different team each week? They just go around the whole league.
Ooh, doubtful. Doubtful. That's tough on HBO.
Jobs. Tough jobs.
Last one. I saw on Twitter that an Ohio State fan lost a bet to his friend, had to get a Puddles the Duck tattoo. Tattoo bets, thing or not a thing?
Bad idea. Don't do it. Don't do anything. Don't make a bet that you're going to regret for the rest of your life. You know, just the general philosophy.
At least Puddles is cute, so it's not the worst thing about tattoos.
Listen, do clothes. You know, that's what Puddles the Duck.
He's the mascot. Yeah. You don't know who Puddles is?
No.
Yeah, he's their mascot.
Oh, it's Oregon's mascot named Puddles?
Of course. Yeah. Ducks, you know, like
I just thought it was Donald Duck. Puddles.
Can't name him.
He looks just like Donald Duck.
Well, they can't call him that. They don't own that.
Well, I understand that, Chops. I'm just saying, I didn't know his name was Puddles.
Yeah, can't go.
They can come up with a better name for him.
Can't go Lake, or you know.
Can't they call him Dave the Duck?
No.
Don? What about Don?
We're going.
Puddles is a way better name than Dave. What are you talking about?
Don is way better than. First of all, you name that thing Don. That's a win. Puddles.
Don the Duck?
Yeah, Don. Dave.
No, Puddles is great.
Listen, there's nothing
better.
I like
Puddles. Bill the Beaver.
Better.
We're trying to go find Bill the Beaver.
Bill the Beaver, exactly. When you give animals human names, everybody wins. You understand? So this is a mascot, which is an animal. Human name, that's a win. Nobody ever saw a dog. If you call a dog Gus, win. We just named your beaver Bill.
Depends on the dog, doesn't it? Like, it depends on the breed.
Right, but look at the beaver we just named Bill. Now the kids are out wanting to know, where's Bill at, Dad?
You named it Bill.
Did it take?
It did.
We had turkey that was cruising around through here that I named Tom. Not around anymore. Don't know why.
Bambi.
Yeah, but what if you named the beaver Chompy? Chompy the beaver. That's fun, too.
It's not as funny as Bill.
Bill's pretty good. But I disagree.
You have to think of everything from this perspective of...
You clearly just like alliteration. That's clear right now.
No, not necessarily. Because I also like the idea of my wife yelling at a dog that we don't have yet with, like, a human name. Like, I'm going to get a dog. I'm going to name him Roger Sterling. I want my wife yelling at a dog named Roger. That, to me, is funny. Better than
we had a black lab named Frank. We had Frank Max.
That's great. I love that.
Frank Max was our golden gold yellow lab. We had Frank with our black lab, Newfoundland mix.
I like
some of the other ones.
I like human names on animals. I think that's a win.
My dad named one Rottweiler Bronco because I won the Bronco Nagurski that year.
See, that's a good
total animal move. Total animal move.
See? That's it. We hit Hey Guys up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
If the sound of another man slammed against plexiglass turns you on, you've come to the right place. Proud to be your home for Jackets hockey. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Two guys who love to see it. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
I mean, they really missed the boat. It's somebody on social. I want to get from Alex. You got to name
PJ
that
Flack?
Doug.
Doug.
Alex said you got to name that duck Doug.
Gosh.
Doug the Duck. Doug the Duck. They'd have 12 national titles with Doug the Duck leading the way.
They don't need that. They beat us in the shoe with
Doug.
Puddles.
Just imagine how dominant they'd be with Doug.
Gosh, I don't even want to know what the score would have been.
175
I like Puddles. I think Puddles is adorable.
I'm team Puddles.
team puddles
weak,
too.
Weak out of both of you.
Yep. I just envision a nice, funny, goofy duck just splashing in a puddle. Beautiful no, mallard just
you
doing
can't
it.
Name something that he's splashing in.
Why not?
That's what I'm saying. I imagine a beautiful duck splashing in a lake, and then you want to name it Lake.
No, can't
you
do
wouldn't
it.
Do that. You wouldn't name a duck
same,
Lake.
Doesn't have the same charm as puddles.
Well, you make a point there. Human names. All right, Chops. Hey, guys. Go.
Nothing is off limits. Your participation is required. Just use the hashtag, hey, guys, and ask Bishop and Laurinaitis anything you want. Do it now.
All right. This one from Al. He says, if you had to do a show with another host, who would you prefer? Bobby, Schlegs, Coach Fickell, or Coach Marcus? Also, would pairing Bobby and Coach Fickell be a great show?
Wait a second. Mm. So they're asking threes. So if
both
I'm
of
out.
Us. Both of us. So if you had to do, if we had to pick, either of us had to pick someone else to do a show with, I'll answer this real, I'll answer the Bobby Luke thing real quick. I saw that movie, okay?
Jeez.
It is wildly entertaining. That is something that you would need fan TV to have just for the facial expressions and reaction of Luke's face on some of the things Bobby says. Okay? That'd be pure joy. Anyway, for myself, you have interviewed Marcus and I together at the same time.
I have.
I'm not sure we'd get much done, but if you let us be unfiltered, it would be very entertaining.
It would be.
It'd be very entertaining, but yes. I'm not sure we could get through a full...
Yeah.
A full show.
No.
Who would you pick? If you had to ditch me...
So who are my choices? So you're out, and I got Bob, Luke, Marcus, and who else? Is that
Schlegs.
Those three? Schlegs? Well, it's Bob. I've done shows with Bob. But Bob and I, we'd be all right.
I think Anthony's going to come up and crush you.
Well, the problem
right
with Schlegs...
in Jacksonville. He's going to come up here and crush you.
I've done shows with Schlegs, too. The tricky part with Schlegs is... is trying to corral it. I mean, how do you corral the Schlegs? Like,
yeah, how do you think
so...
Beam felt with Bob and Schlegs?
That's what led Beam to drink. That's what led him to drink. Because I don't know, that was... So, how do you corral Schlegs? That's why when we did, you know, what was it? What did we do? Whatever with Schlegs? I mean, we birthed him from our loins on this show. What was the name of that segment?
Surviving with Schlegs.
Surviving with Schlegs.
That's right.
When we dropped Surviving with Schlegs... and birthed him onto the Buckeye Nation from a radio perspective, it's a 12-minute segment where you don't know where this thing's going to go, man.
No. You're going to
talk
about
3 hours.
You're going to talk about high school football, probably, and just smashing dudes. Just dudes being dudes.
The stuff where he would go hunt in the middle of the night and then show up for school, the weightlifting training at Gold's Gym, and then go to class, and somehow was able to get into the Air Force Academy.
Yep.
And Luke, I don't know Luke well enough to know, you know, what that would be like.
I do, but Luke's too disciplined.
Yeah.
Doing a show with Luke would be almost like doing a show with Trestle. Like, you're going to talk about a lot of stuff, but you're not going to get anything out of him. You know? Even
like,
if
what's
said, hey,
the debauched Luke Fickell? Like, what's him completely loose? I don't know what that is. Never
I think
seen.
He just wants to bear hug and smash somebody, like, and legit wants to put on a singlet and wrestle. Like, when he gets, you know what I mean? When he gets fired up, I'll never forget. I've told this story before, I think, but Bobby got in trouble during a walkthrough. He came out with a roll of tape that was on the end of a string. You know, like, you roll to a ball of tape, and you have, like, just a single string of tape, and you use it. And he whipped Schlegs right in the privates with it during a walkthrough. And so, of course, Schlegs, you know, makes a scene, punches Bob in the chest, you know, all this.
Oh, come on, you know, boy, I didn't mean to hit you. Yeah, you did.
You know, all this stuff. and so Bob, Luke kicks him out, tells him to go inside and rehab or whatever. And so, you know, then the rest of the guys are making bets on what period Bob will come back out to practice. It was obviously second to last, comes out, you know, with hair tied on the man bun and, you know, nice little lather from a workout, veins popping everywhere. And anyway, this carries into the meeting room. And so Bob gets kicked out of the linebacker meeting room, and Luke tries to slam the door. The problem was it was one of those pressurized doors. So he tries to slam that thing so fast, and it's just a slow release close. And then immediately starts cussing out me and Marcus. Like, don't you be like that! Like, well, what did we do? We've been sitting here quiet the whole time. Looking mad at us because, you know, you're one of your children is, you know, misbehaving.
Russell says, hey, guys, going to Napa this week. I don't drink wine. What's the strategy? He adds, well, I do drink wine. I just tend to go too hard.
Oh, you can't do that there. You got to pace yourself, my friend.
So I'll give you three things you got. First of all, it's amazing. Like, you,
I have not been funds. Yet. And the wife, that's
really?
One of the things. I've got to get the wife out there. She's been dying
to go. Oh, boy. All right. Yeah. Well, so I had, we actually got engaged out there. Here's what I'll tell
you. Ooh, look at you.
You know, the kid. this is what I would tell you about it. First of all, you don't drink wine, you will, and you'll find out how great it is. It's great. It's not good. It's great. Especially out
it's
there.
Incredible.
It's stunningly good. It's probably one of those places that when you leave, you will go, if I had infinite funds, this is what I would do. I would own a winery. I would live here. The weather's perfect. The vistas are stunning. The food is extraordinary. It's perfect. I mean, it's everything that you'd want it to be. Two pieces of advice. Hire a driver. Ooh. Hire a driver.
Yeah.
Because the driving up and down, there's one road that goes through Napa, two roads that go through Napa, and then there's one through Sonoma's a little more windy, but Napa's where you're headed. And you're going to be up in Calistoga. You'll be up. You'll be back. You're going to want to have a driver. And the other thing I would tell you is, and nobody told us this, and I got hammered the first day that we were there.
Eat.
Yeah. But no, the wineries don't, most of the time, don't have food. Like, they have little skinny breadsticks, but they don't have food.
Yeah.
Pack a sandwich.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Pack a sandwich. I'll tell you what. I was surprised at the, they had like a food court type setup, like a North Market almost, in Napa. And we stayed there. We played the Seahawks, and then we played. This is my only time in Napa. We played the Seahawks, and then we were playing the Niners. And so we stayed where the Raiders stay in Napa for the week.
Yeah.
We practiced at the Raiders training camp facility. And anyway, all I know is that we stayed at one of the, like a resort that was a winery as well. And it's week 17, Coach. What do we think we're doing on that Tuesday? You know, we're drinking the complimentary bottle of wine in your room, and you're going to the winery doing a taste test. And then we went down to the Napa little food court, or, you know, their version of North Market. It was elite. The food there is incredible, but you got to eat. If you don't eat, it's going to be a bad deal.
Pack a lunch, man.
Pack a lunch.
Comics fan has a specific, hey, James, do you remember the team's reaction when Nike updated our uniforms back in 06? Did everyone mourn the lack of gray in the home sleeves back then, or did some guys like them?
I think people were wondering, you know, where'd the gray go, for sure. We were more concerned with the fact that, to be honest, a lot of the fan stuff wasn't so much on the stripe as it was on the shiny gray or silver in the pants changed. To, like, the gray, you know, like our old
flat
pants, because of the material, they couldn't get the silver to shine the same for some reason. So for us, though, as players, it was like a whole new world with the moisture wicking material. That was like the first time when they made that change. And you were like, oh, the jerseys are so much like tighter, like physically tighter. So as a linebacker, you weren't going to get held. The pants were tighter. You're like, oh, this is nice. You know, this is way lighter material when you sweat. I do remember the conversations about the gray, for sure. But to be honest, I mean, as players, you don't really have that much time to even discuss it. It just kind of happened, you know. And I'm telling you, especially when you played for Luke, like our biggest battle with Luke, like for one, he did not want to come with anything about uniforms, but was getting the black socks back in. Allowing us to wear black socks instead of the white Nike issued was a battle, because the last time they had worn them, they got smoked by Penn State at Penn State. And so since then, he didn't want any damn team wearing black socks as long as he was there. And we had to convince him that, Luke, it's okay. It's all right. That just because you guys lost in the black socks doesn't mean that we will lose every game because we're wearing black socks.
I think one of the most amazing things is that we've gone 15 years without gray being represented on our primary home uniform.
That's right.
And the colors are scarlet and gray.
I was more upset about the
15
actual...
years.
I was more upset, though, about the way the field turf was designed. The fact that Ohio State and Buckeyes doesn't have gray in it, and the Blocko doesn't have gray in it.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's the men of scarlet and gray. It's not the men of scarlet and black.
That's right.
It's a cool color. Use it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Last one today. Adam says, hey, guys, considering all the fan radio personalities, what would be the most entertaining pair? And what spouses or significant others would be good at radio as well?
Well, I think we're the most entertaining pair in terms of. We are the ones doing the show, so I mean, if we said somebody else, we'd be undercutting ourselves. And
what if you could pair up two people who aren't paired up?
Oh, yeah, that's what the question is. You pair up people who aren't currently.
I would love to have. You know who I would love to see? I would love a 3-hour special of Common Man and Bobby.
That happened. I think that's happened. I feel like Mike and Bob have done shows.
So I need to.
I've done shows with Mike years ago. I did a couple of shows with Mike. Mike and I used to do TV together. Yep. I'm trying to think if I've ever done one. I don't think I've ever done with Bone. I've done a show
with AR. With Bone or Mike.
AR and I had a show. I've done a show with Maddie. Beam. I've done shows with Beam.
Mm.
I think Bone's probably the only one that I haven't.
Mm.
I think an unfiltered Mike and Bob.
Yeah.
Right?
Drunk.
Like, let's say it was the last show that they ever were going to do, the two of them.
Yeah.
Like, forever again. The last radio show they were ever going to do, and there was no consequences.
Yeah.
I think that could be fun.
Anything can be discussed.
Anything could be said. Anything can be discussed.
You give them a couple first Fridays, and you say, have at it. This is a podcast forum.
I think that's got a shot to be quite interesting.
Mm.
It happened once. It would happen one time. That would be the end of that. All right. Coming up next, Luke Fickell in the news. He was asked the question. He addressed it in a way that only Luke can. We get to that coming up next. Bishman Laurinaitis right here in the Fan.
All sports, all the time, and whatever it is Common Man and T-Bone do, we still don't know. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Well-dressed, well-spoken, but never, ever a well-drink.
How about chaos?
Insanity. Absolute insanity.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
BLS here on The Fan. Get to Luke here in just a second, as he had a classic Luke answer before we do that, though.
Let me guess. I haven't looked at the quotes. I haven't heard his interview.
Sure.
But I guarantee he's dropped some kind of quote about the grass isn't greener, you know.
I believe that's number 407 in the sound that we'll play in a second.
Just know the guy. I know the guy, you know.
No, for sure.
You dropped that line on me, I think, to get me to come back to school.
Probably. Join the Fan for the Ozone Tailgate on Lane for the best game day tailgate in town. Catch the pregame show with Matty Ice and Tyvus Powell. Listen to live music. Watch the game. If you're not headed inside, be sure to bring cash for your favorite tailgate refreshments. The Ozone Tailgate on Lane is sponsored by TNT Equipment, Pepsi Zero, Capital City Concrete, and Corona. See you on Saturday for the game. So the Cincinnati beat. Reporters and the people on the conference call were able to ask Luke some questions about USC, and he gives, in addition to the grass isn't always greener, here is Luke on the fact that he has not spoken to anyone at USC, and frankly, he wouldn't.
We can't even talk about Indiana yet, huh? I know nothing. No, we know nothing. I mean, look, I don't talk to anybody. I barely talk to my own family during the season, and you know, so I wouldn't ever talk about it, nor would I have even answer a phone call or anything like that. So I know nothing, nor does it make me have any interest. So it's not a big deal. It's nothing but distractions if people allow it to be. And for us, it can't be.
All right. You mentioned the grass not always being greener. Here's Luke saying exactly that.
This is a crazy world and a crazy business, and I think it does nothing more than show a lot of us that, you know, stability is great in this business, and when you can create some stability in the things that are around you, grass is not always greener, and if not anything, it does, you know, if you're going to spend any time thinking about it, it does make you realize what great fortunes you have to be building something and have some stability. You know, not just for you as a person and you as a family guy, but you as a program and the kids in your program.
So here's what, and you again, I think it goes without saying, you know him better than me. He lives in a great town. He lives in a great town with an incredible system of Catholic schools. In fact, you'd argue from a high school standpoint, it's as famous as any in the country in terms of the GCL. Yep. So you've got that. He is in his home state and can recruit his home state and can see people who know what he's all about. He doesn't have to sell himself to anybody. He walks into any high school coach's office in the state of Ohio, in northern Kentucky, in Pennsylvania, in Indiana, and they know who he is. Period.
Yep. Yep.
All of that matters. He's moving to the Big 12. That matters. He's making a lot of money. Right? He's making a lot of money. He controls his own destiny at UC. Everything he... You make a very straight case from his perspective. Why would I leave? That's why I used the Chris Peterson analogy earlier at Boise State. He stuck around at Boise State for a long time, won a lot, and then it felt like finally he was like, you know what? I got to go try this somewhere else and just see if I can do it. And he went to Washington, and he did. He won. They played in a playoff at Washington. Yep. Is Washington as good a job at USC? No. Could he have had USC at certain points? Yeah, probably for sure.
Yep.
But he really liked the situation at Boise.
Yeah.
That just might be Luke.
I think if Cincinnati wasn't joining the Big 12, right? Because they're going to stay a Power 5 conference. And I don't think that they're done adding teams. So in his mind, I get to stay in Ohio. I've built this thing up to where I'm in the playoff conversation now. I will especially be in the playoff conversation if over the next 3 weeks I get two more wins. If I went out, you know, in the AAC. But if you're going to tell me that I'm going to have a better chance at the playoff, I could keep my family here. Don't forget, Landon is at Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Luca is, I believe, in high school. The older set of twins are schooled. The younger set of twins are... So, that's a lot of kids to uproot.
Yeah.
It took a lot to move down just 71. With a great Catholic school system, with the great areas to live. I believe they're in Indian Hill, if I'm not mistaken. Great place to live.
Yep.
But it took a lot to get him down there. Why? He was patient. He was so patient with the right situation. I ask him every offseason, hey, man, you got to take a job? You got to take a job? Take a job? He said no to even interviewing for certain jobs that some would deem, you know, a step up. West Virginia, hey, you know what? You're up in a Power 5. You're in the Big 12. He has sat patiently. And it's kind of like, oh, hey, look. Now Cincinnati's in the Big 12.
Yeah. It might be a better job than West Virginia now.
It might be an easier path to get into the playoff than trying to go rehash USC. What if Chip Kelly's got his thing rolling now?
He
what if
doesn't.
Chip Kelly becomes, you know what, all those kids we talked about? What if they're like, you know what? I want to go play down in... I want to play for UCLA. They just smacked around. I mean, if it's undefeated UCLA, which I don't know if it will be, but if it is, undefeated UCLA versus undefeated Oregon in the Pac-12 championship, you got yourself a ball game. You know, maybe that turns the tide for UCLA. Look, I understand USC is a way better job but than UCLA, I'm saying, in that city. But I just overall, you can start to see why Luke would say, this is as obvious as some people that don't know me think it is, right? There's a lot of national analysts right now that are thinking, oh, yeah, for sure he'll take it. It's USC versus Cincinnati. They
it's
don't know
his
him.
Specific wants. You don't know what his – we know what his why is.
Do
they
it,
don't.
Yes.
So that's the difference. His family – the reason that he was a defensive coordinator here, he could have had the – maybe he could have got the pit job. He could have had any MAC job he wanted at any point early in his career, any one of them. But guess what? He and Amy liked living in Columbus.
Yep.
They like the schools. They like family. Like, it matters to them. He wasn't just going to take any job. So, no, it's about more than that for him. That's his why. He's probably, if you were to ask him, and if you go back 25 years and say, Luke Fickell, you're going to be, what's he making? $3 million, something like that at Cincinnati? You're going to be making $3 million coaching, being a head coach of a team in Ohio. He'd said, you're nuts.
Yep.
You're kidding me. Yep. I got it that good? So, and who's
guess
to
what?
Say?
That will probably bump up once they go to the Big 12.
Right.
And he just signed this extension. Just off the principle, he just signed an extension, what, this last offseason? Like, just off that alone, he's not a guy to say, oh, I did this, I committed to you, now I'm out. Just, there's so many layers to it, to the person Luke Fickell, and what drives him. I can't imagine the pride he has knowing that he's built this thing into a playoff conversation, or, you know, university for football. The NIP has been absolutely rocking. And so there's got to be a deep pride in that. I've brought it to here. What's my next challenge here? Desmond Ritter leaves. Who's the next QB? Who's the next wave of guys? They got a lot of guys being talked about as first-round picks. Can I keep this as a cycle now and not just do it one time? That's my challenge, especially as we enter the Big 12. Let me see it through to that conference. Let me try to win the Big 12.
Yeah.
You know, so there are all these goals that I'm sure are in his head.
I'll say this. I believe he would win there.
Yeah.
And I think he would be a big success there. I just don't know if that's what he wants. My hunch is that it's not. We will talk about the USC job. We'll talk about the early thoughts on the college football season, including Chris Vedini's thoughts on what he saw from Ohio State against Oregon. That is coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
1, 2, 3.
The Daily Coach Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by Credit Union of Ohio and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
This is a Daily Show with Coach Ryan Day, brought to you by Safe Flight Auto Glass. Certainly this past Saturday, C.J. Stroud, with some of the things he did, was that another big example of the way he's continuing to grow and evolve as a quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, for the second game of the year in that environment, you know, overall, you know, we came up short, but he showed a lot of bright spots, threw some really good football, showed some really impressive poise there. So, you know, again, this is a work in progress with him. I think we probably put too much on his plate in that game. You know, we need to take some off of his plate in the run game and on defense, but there was certainly a bright spot there.
Okay, we'll have another comment in just a moment.
Meet or on the rocks, just act accordingly.
Starts with a glass of bourbon, then goes to, oh, First Blood's on. I think I'll watch this again.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, time to head out on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems fan guest hotline for a visit with our good buddy Chris Vedini. He covers college football for The Athletic. By the way, before we, and Chris will have something to say about this, certainly, Urban Meyer just now down in Jacksonville on the USC rumors, there's no chance I'm committed here in building an organization. I think that's truthful, knowing Urban, but I would also say that Nick Saban had a similar press conference one time in Miami and then went to Bama, so you never know. Chris, let's start there at USC, where they make a decision relatively early in this season. Clay Helton is out. About a billion names have been thrown around. We spent time talking about our old buddy Luke Fickell in the last segment. We're kind of dubious to think that would necessarily be a fit for him from his perspective. What do you think about the USC job and what they ought to do?
Well, there's a lot of options, like you said, and there's been talk about some NFL coordinators like Eric Bieniemy potentially being interested. I think if you're USC, you need to hire somebody who has already been through something like this, someone who has coached at a big job, someone who has recruited at a big level, someone who has won at a big level, because you need someone's proven. This isn't the time to try out a first-time head coach or something like that. And when you look at the possibilities, you know, you look at what Mario Cristobal is doing at Oregon, that's exactly what USC needs. He is recruiting at a top 10, top 5 level, an SEC-type recruiting aspect. They're strong in the trenches. They play pretty good defense. You get Kayvon Thibodeau, a top recruit defensive player, to come all the way out to Oregon. That's exactly the kind of thing USC is supposed to be. Well, would Cristobal want the job? I don't know. He's already winning the Pac-12. You know, how much is there to gain other than maybe a bit more money? He was underpaid at Oregon. He only made like 2.7 last year. I think that's up to over 4 now, over 4 million. USC can and should pay more. But if you're Cristobal, do you sit there, keep winning at Oregon, and wait for Nick Saban to retire at Alabama and potentially go back there? It's a possibility. But in terms of what USC needs to be, I think you look at what Oregon is, and that's exactly what it should be, which is a recruiting powerhouse that's tough in the trenches.
Yeah, Chris, it's incredible to think that USC is, I mean, not one of the teams that we're consistently talking about year in, year out when it comes to the playoff. I'm wondering, James Franklin's name was thrown around at that job. I believe, Bo, was a Dan Patrick show.
Yeah,
his name was mentioned about being interested in that. He's obviously been linked out there before. Your thoughts on James Franklin being a fit and whether you think that he would jump from State College out to L.A.?
Yeah, whether or not, you know, there's been any talk, I don't know. It's early. There's 3 months to go on this stuff, and Penn State plays Auburn this week, so I don't think James Franklin's really right. Thinking about USC at the moment. But he's another guy who feels like he would fit. He's produced 2 or 3 top 10 teams at Penn State in the last couple of years. He recruits at a top 15 level. He's a dynamic personality. So it fits a lot. Now him and Cristobal, there's been questions about their in-game, you know, coaching moves, but no coach is perfect. I think Franklin fits a lot of those same categories as well, because he's a guy who recruits to
of place and wins. You know, he's not at the Ohio State level, but there are, you know, some disadvantages at a place like Penn State compared to Ohio State, and USC doesn't have those.
Chris, let's talk about Ohio State. Open against Minnesota, give up a ton of yards rushing. 10 days later, similar result against Oregon here. First, I mean, we've lost these type of games. Ohio State's lost these type of games before. But to be really bullied at home was a bit of a shock to us. What did you make of what happened on Saturday here at the Shoe?
Yeah, it was very surprising. And it went to show that the especially the defensive issues are not pertain to one game or one player. And this is now several games in a row going back to last year that the defense has been a problem. Ohio State, I mean, you know, James, you would know, they just look slow, on, especially on defense, on the linebacker spot where they have not recruited well for a number of years, and that really showed up against a team like Oregon, which was able to set the edge time and time again. And again, Oregon did that without Kayvon Thibodeau and Justin Flo, and I know Ohio State was able to move the ball a bit, but it was a very impressive win. And C.J. Stroud, it's kind of two games in a row now. He started out slow, inaccurate, he's throwing too high, but he gets a run. He ended up throwing for the second most yards ever in Ohio State history. He's not really the problem here, but he does need to get off to quicker starts, I think. And so those are kind of things I took away from that game.
Chris, as you look around college football as a whole, our producer read the stat that it's been the most losses by AP-ranked teams within the first 2 weeks of a season. That gets me excited for college football that, you know, hey, these upsets are coming back. I think for over the last few years, if memory serves me right, it just seems like we've almost simulated to the playoff, right? And it's been there will still be the same teams at the end of the year, but do you think that there is a little bit more wide openness, with the exception of Bama maybe, to college football this season?
Potentially. You know, we'll see what the Alabama-Florida game looks like. If Alabama dominates Florida, then maybe Alabama and Georgia are the clear top teams and that's it. But, you know, we saw Oklahoma escape Tulane. We saw Ohio State lose. Clemson has lost, but that was, you know, to Georgia. So I hope so. I mean, I agree with you that it's not good that the same handful of teams are the ones at the top every year. So, you know, we'll see how much of that or how much just the rankings were poor coming off of the COVID season. That could play a role as well.
Big one, we mentioned James Franklin and Penn State. Big one for him, big one for the league, right? When your bell cow goes down the week before, an opportunity to play an SEC team, I don't think anyone is under the delusion that Auburn is Georgia or Bama, but they've got players. They recruit it well. They got pros playing up at Happy Valley. What's your read early on that situation with Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, with Auburn, you don't really know yet. They've scored 60 points in two games, but they haven't played anybody. They've played two really bottom feeder teams. So we don't really know. Going to Happy Valley to play that Penn State defense is a whole other animal. They've been pretty impressive, Penn State. I know the Wisconsin game was a bit ugly, but you go win at Camp Randall, then come back with a comfortable win over Ball State, who won the MAC last year. I think it's not a bad team. And Sean Clifford has been so much better with not throwing interceptions and fumbling the ball. They've been taking care of the ball. That's such a huge thing for them. So it's gone about as well as you could hope for Penn State. And we've seen them in a tough game, so we know what they can do. Auburn, we don't really know yet. And that's going to be the real question, is how does this Auburn team look when they're not playing Akron, you know, like they did already?
Chris, Iowa. Iowa, I had their game against Indiana where they made Penix look really bad. They're so just sound defensively. They beat Iowa State in Ames with all the attention on that game. They'll be forgotten about the next few weeks with Kent State and Colorado State. But do you have confidence that can be a team that will get to Indy unscathed? They're hosting Penn State at their place. They'll have to go to Camp Randall. But I'm just wondering overall, I think for Ohio State fans, as you start looking down the pipe, we got our own issues. But you say, hey, can Iowa get to Indy undefeated to stay ranked extremely high to maybe help you get a chance there?
Undefeated, I'm not sure. I mean, Iowa was my pick to win the division coming in. I mean, you look at the way last season played out. They lost two close games to Purdue and Northwestern kind of in the fourth quarter there. But then they win their final six games by an average of like 20 points a game or something like that. And then that's continued in this year. They've been completely dominant through two games. against Iowa State and Cincinnati, and the defense is one of Phil Parker's, you know, specialties, where every few years they've got an elite-level defense, and they have that here. Now, the offense has not been great, and I think that's where you have some concerns. I think I had fewer than 200 yards, I think, against Iowa State, last week. So they have not moved the ball particularly well, but they haven't needed to. They're still my pick to win the division, but undefeated is going to be tough, especially when you're going to be playing most likely in a lot more low-scoring games.
Chris, we always appreciate your perspective. Thanks for the time today, pal.
Yep, thanks for having me.
All right, that's Christopher Vanini, National College Football Writer for The Athletic. It is a First Friday. We get you officially endorsed. And three things coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
The Cleveland Browns Preview Show. The ultimate way to get ready for the season. Wednesday night at 9.
Presented by Pins Mechanical.
Your home of the Browns. The Fan. Their favorite sport is berating their producer.
You just sat there for 10 minutes.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
It's a First Friday. Time for your officially endorsed. Hit it, Chopper.
You drink for the wrong reasons. My generation, we drink because it's good. Because it feels better than unbuttoning your collar. Because we deserve it. We drink because it's what men do.
All right, there's one bourbon that I would put up there all time for me that's right up there with the Pappy 20, and that's Elmer T. Lee. This is a bourbon that you used to be able to get for $28. Elmer T. Lee was the guy that said, you know what, maybe we got to do single barrel bourbon, and he was the guy that started Blanton's and was the master distiller for a long time, and then his own namesake bourbon is stunningly good. It was a $28 bottle. I used to be able to get it anywhere. He passed away a number of years ago, and at that point, bourbon started to take off, and everyone started to look for it, and everyone realized how great it is. It is that great. You can't get it anymore. But you can get it, and I understand that if you're not aware of this, that I'm losing some of my opportunity to get some. But it is in the new lottery that's coming out with the Ohio Liquor. So I think you have to sign up by September 19th and scoop up a bottle.
Will you text me? How do I do that? You got to text me how to sign up for that.
I don't even know how to sign. I've never won anything in these things.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you just know people.
No, I don't. You can't. In bourbon anymore, you can't. Knowing people don't do you any good.
I know.
So sign up, kids. And if you win this one, understand how big.
So I'm saying, where do I sign up? Where do I go?
I go to ohioliquor.com, OHLQ, something like that.
I can't spell liquor. It's tricky.
It is tricky, yeah. But Elmer's one of them. So if you can win it, it's a big win for you. All right, three things. Hit it.
One, two, one, two. Three things with Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
A melancholy number one for me, rest in peace to Norm MacDonald, a 10-year battle with cancer that virtually nobody knew about. He's consistently made me laugh as hard as anybody,
yep.
And is probably the best Weekend Update host of all time. That goes way back. And probably the best talk show guest of all time. Go watch his last appearance on Letterman. Go watch him on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Go watch his appearance on Conan's show. Those are unbelievable, let alone playing Turd Ferguson on Jeopardy on SNL.
Incredible.
So, what a career, what a life, and just consistently hilarious the whole time.
My first thing, it is my sweet oldest 7th birthday today.
Wow.
So the poor, she can't go to soccer practice tonight yet, couldn't go to school, obviously. But we're over here at the barn. We're making it really special for her. She got spoiled. She'll get to go back and celebrate on Friday with her friends at school. But happy 7th birthday to sweet London.
My first thing. So I figured this out. The grocery store by my house, on the back it has those coupons, and all grocery stores do that. But one of them is to the Mexican restaurant that's also right by our house. So I use that every time. Wanted to go to that restaurant last night, didn't have one, so I said, why not just go buy something that's less than $5, get the $5 off. It's basically like whatever we got at the grocery store is free. Crack the system. It's a perfect plan.
There we go.
Number two for me. Yesterday was well visit for Bootsy and Black Cobra. So in the middle of the well visit, you know, you got to get checked out. So they're sitting with the doctor, and Bootsy just passes gas. He then proceeds to find it to be the funniest thing
that has ever happened in the history of the world. So, I love the young man. I love him. He loves himself more than even I love him. And he finds himself to be the funniest person on the face of the earth. So the doctor said a great line. He goes, "This is why I got into pediatrics. It's a lot more fun dealing with this than with adults."
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Adults nice tend to be frustrating. Yeah. 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 I told you. Hayden thought I was the funniest things in the world when she couldn't smell her own toots. So anyway, my second thing is Hayden finally gets to go to pre-K tomorrow. She was supposed to start school a week ago on Wednesday. For obvious reasons, she couldn't. But she is now finally able to have her first day, which means Cersei will be popping champagne probably at 9:30 in the morning.
Mimosas, baby.
Another Titan of Industry moment for me yesterday. We got our bill for our trash collection, and it was the first time we had gotten it, and you know, you pay like quarterly or whatever. And so I logged into the system and I'm like, I don't know what the password was. I don't even think I set it up, so I need to like reset the password. And it's like, well, we sent it to this email, and instead of Finch in the email, it is Flinch. They think my name is Flinch.
Yes.
And then they're like, you have to call this number to change your email. And I was like, I'm not calling any number. So I made that email. And just because nobody else is named Mark Flinch. So I made that email, then sent it to that one, got my new password, went back to the website, changed it to the correct email, and paid my bill.
So you created an email address rather than going through the hassle of them getting it right.
Yes.
It's amazing. Oh, boy. No, number three for me. Well, it happened, guys. It happened. I knew this moment would happen. I anticipated this moment happening, you know, like 7th, 8th grade. Black Cobra 4th grader brought home math. I don't know what the hell he's being asked to do. I can't make sense of it. He's coloring in these cubes and triangles that have to be a whole. It's fractions. Mm. I don't understand what's being asked. I don't get the lesson.
Yeah, they're not even the sine, cosine, or tangent, are they?
Yep. Yep. No. I told the blonde. I go, look, that's on you. If you need to spend an hour during the day, getting your math in order.
Yeah.
Best of luck to you.
Yeah.
Man's got to know his limitations.
My wife will absolutely destroy the math with the girls. You know, she is so good with numbers. My only contribution to them will be history. I love learning about history.
Yeah.
So when they're learning about it, I would love to dive in and learn again with them, you know, and kind of go through that. But when it comes to history, Cersei is not... I mean, honestly, if I ask her when the country started and she starts with 17, I feel like we've won. You know, I feel like we've accomplished the goal. I honestly asked her one time, and she said 19. I said, let's just stop. Let's just keep it moving. You're really good at numbers. I love you. My third thing, I opened up a can of worms, but I knew this day would come. Monday, London, birthday present, horseback riding lessons.
Yes.
And here we are.
Yes.
She was so geeked. She is so geeked. There's a place right up the road from the barn. And we told her she opened up her gift today, and it was a new pair of boots. So she's got new cowboy boots, and she's ready to roll.
Yes. Oh, I love this.
Tough day for couch sitting yesterday, I got to tell you. I'm sitting down, and I look down because I see something out of the corner of my eye. Little spider, or not a little spider, pretty big spider running around. I go, and it runs under the couch. How am I supposed to sit on the couch for the rest of the day when a spider that I deemed big just ran back under the couch? What am I supposed to do about it? Kit also ate a cricket yesterday. So many insect things going on at the house.
Welcome to home ownership. Enjoy your first Friday. Sounds like Chops needs one. We're back tomorrow for more fun. Rothman and Ice up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.